missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar the Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast, RadonBufang.net. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Jeff.
Hello.
Allie.
It is 3 a.m. here.
Britt.
Hi.
And Delaney.
Yola.
Today we'll be discussing Kuvira's Gambit, episode 11 of book 4 of The Legend of Korra. And crazy episode, a lot to get into, a lot to talk about for next week's finale. The series finale of The Legend of Korra next week, December 19th.
My god.
So we don't really know when it's going online yet. I've been trying to get Nick to release it at midnight on their website, and it actually looks like they're listening to me. So
I don't think I think it's possible that they thought about it before you said it to them.
No, I don't think so. I highly doubt that.
Let
anyway,
Dylan have his 2 minutes.
What I'm trying to do, and I also think Nick's website team listens to this. So here's what I was trying to do, Nick's website team, is I'm trying to give you the most realistic scenario that gets us the episode the soonest at midnight on your website. So it's not at 3 a.m. on Amazon, which didn't even happen this week. Like, we're up and it didn't happen at 3 a.m. on Amazon.
I
don't know.
I'll stay up and...
Okay, next week for the podcast...
See, wasn't it good that I went to bed?
Yeah, you made a great decision.
Yeah, I went to bed too.
Yeah, you did.
I passed out on call.
I was in class.
Next week's podcast, we're going to have a live video podcast at some point. It depends when Nick gets the episode up. If you want to know when we're going to do that, that's exciting. We're on YouTube Live. You can... subscribe to our YouTube channel. I assume it would give you a notification. FTSW Podcast is what we are on YouTube. Or you can follow the DF Tumblr or Twitter at DongBufang, one word. And there you'll get information on that. It's really fun. You can ask us questions and you'll answer them live. We'll also have a recorded audio podcast that Friday night, and we'll probably have another one Saturday night. So there'll be a lot of finale coverage from the Spirit World podcast. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's the series finale. It's going to be insane. And
we're going to talk about it 20 years later, too.
Yeah.
I'm gonna cry.
We'll have a reunion 20 years later.
Podcast.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think, was there any news? I mean, there's news about episode descriptions, but it also seems like these episode descriptions are misleading, so we don't even have to talk about them.
We should talk about other...
Of note is that the last episode says Korra faces off with Kuvira one-on-one for the fate of the Earth Kingdom and the fate of the Avatar, but I think that they're slightly misleading on purpose.
She has the poison.
She's going to be giant spirit Korra.
Great. Okay. Okay, we're gonna talk about Kuvira's Gambit.
Can that not happen, please?
Okay, so here's gonna be the format of this podcast. We're gonna get initial thoughts on Kuvira's Gambit, then we're gonna briefly discuss finale predictions a little bit, basically because I think the biggest thing to discuss at the end of this episode is who's dead and who's alive. So we're gonna do that right after we get into initial thoughts. And then we're going to discuss specifics of the episode, grade the episode, and then give more finale predictions at the end. So let's start with what you thought of Kuvira's Gambit as in general, and like one thing you liked about it, I guess. Let's start with Mel.
I was chewing, so I didn't hear a lot of that. But, so I actually really liked this episode. I thought it was very fast-paced, but I think that works for the episode. I like the little twisty turns throughout. They're actually pretty clever. There was a few of them. And it was impressive because they crammed a lot into this episode, but it didn't feel like they crammed a lot. I thought those montage scenes were a little weird, though. But
I enjoyed the montage scene.
Yeah.
Cool.
Was there something else?
Jeff, what do you think?
Okay, I guess not.
The only thing I was not super a fan of was... was Prince Wu's, you know, monologue over the radio. That seemed really...
I like that scene.
...new. But, whatever. I absolutely love the sound design on the mech.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. And and just all the scenery in this episode is beautiful. Background music, gorgeous. And the control scheme on the mech. Oh my gosh, I love it. So, we can talk about that later.
The control scheme, ooh, we're going to get into that. Yeah. Shout out to Ben Wynn, sound designer. And Allie, what do you think?
I mean, I did like it. I agree with Mel that it was really fast-paced, and it's not like I didn't like that, but I don't know if it felt rushed, but I felt like it was moving way too fast, and obviously in, like, you know, 24 minutes, it's like, I need more. But I enjoyed it. The only thing I didn't really like about the whole episode is that, like, everyone pretty much, like, predicted everything that happened, like, 10 years before it happened. Like, we'll get into
that. We
didn't
predict Batar Jr. getting kidnapped.
That's true.
Or Tano. Well, we were like, for sure, Tano's not kidding.
No,
when I say we, I mean the fandom as a whole, not like this podcast. But like, anyway, I did like it, but also like with the montage, that was kind of weird. But I did like it.
Cool. Britt, what do you think?
Also,
I actually liked the montage scenes. I thought they were neat. I really liked this episode. I think I only had time to watch it once because I kind of woke up late, but... if I watched it again, I think it might end up being one of my favorites, just because a lot happened. It was really fast-paced. We didn't have a lot of random filler scenes, and we got to see Korra be in her BAMF little self, who's my favorite kind of Korra. You see how much she's grown, how good she is at directing. I was just gushing.
And people are listening to her,
finally. She has, like, really good ideas.
Wow. She's growing up.
This is pretty early for crying.
Maybe
okay.
Well,
don't you wow me, okay? We have one more episode left.
We're wowing you. Okay, Delaney, what do you think?
I really enjoyed this episode. I pretty much agree with what everyone said. Like, at first I was like, oh no, I really didn't want a giant robot. But watching Kavira control it, I was like, I can deal with this. This is pretty cool. I like the control scheme, like Jeff said. It was a beautiful episode. It might not necessarily be one of my favorites, but I really enjoyed it. Like, it was like, after rewatching it, I was like, this is a solid episode. I enjoyed watching all of it. There wasn't really a scene I was like, eh. And then my favorite part, aside from obviously Kavira and the giant, oh my god, I really enjoyed when they snuck onto the airship. Like, I just loved that sequence. Like, that was just, I loved watching Korra. Like, that was just great. I loved it. I loved that entire sequence.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I liked it quite a bit, actually. I think the beginning, the first and last scenes of the episode are the best ones with Kavira and Batar. Like, that's really the frame of the episode. And it really works, I think, emotionally. Everything else is kind of, it's hard to evaluate these episode before the season finale ones. I guess this is the best one of all of Korra, the episode before the season finale. Yeah, I think so. I think this is better than the last season's.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's very solid. I really liked I really like how the episode is framed here. That being said, this isn't on the level of the last two of the season.
It feel like going into a finale.
I think it's... Oh, my goodness. What do you mean it doesn't feel like we're going to... Everyone's dead. Literally, everyone's dead. Okay.
There's not enough.
The other thing is that...
I mean, maybe that last scene, maybe a lot of people did, you know, bite the dust.
Everyone's assuming that everyone lives, but, you know, we'll see.
I mean, we're all assuming everyone lives, but how realistic
is that?
No,
Ali's only assuming that Asami is dead.
No,
listen, we're going to get to that later.
And the other thing that really stands out to me, other than Kavira and Batar interactions, is the overall execution of the Colossus. I think is incredibly good. It looks incredible. The scale of it is very impressive. The sound design is incredible. Everything involving that. I even thought the CGI was good, but we'll see what Sam has to say about it later. And I don't know. I just thought they really pulled that off. It's kind of a dumb concept, but it's executed well. Like, I don't know. I have no interest in this concept, but it was fine. Also, Korra has never looked more like an anime than when the Colossus blows up.
It was basically a tower at night.
It is. It just looks like a Attack on Titan. Also, there's the shot of it at night and the flames come up in front of it. That's so anime. #thatsoanime.
It's so impractical, though. Like, if it falls over, like, can it get back up? I don't think it can.
The point,
like, it's like a one-shot dummy.
The point is that it doesn't fall over.
Also, they didn't do anything with the...
It's top-heavy. Like, you saw it walking.
She can metal bin the whole thing.
Yeah, she can just bend it up.
Like, it's very top-heavy.
But it doesn't fall over.
They didn't do anything with the domes. The Zhaofu domes.
Maybe they used the domes.
They dismantled the domes, melted them down, and they made the suit.
They didn't say that.
Dylan, that's obviously what they did.
No, I don't think it's obvious. I think we're assuming.
I think it's
Hashtag begin dismantling the domes.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah, exactly. I was like, I posted that, and I thought it was not... Okay, before we get into a specific episode, we need to go... We're going to tell you the death power rankings here. So there's about 10 people that could be dead. We're going to tell you who's most likely to be dead in order.
Asami, 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 Asami.
The answer, okay, so Allie, for some reason, thinks Asami's dead, even though she wasn't in the scene
still in the building and had no idea it was coming at her. Yeah. There's a fair chance she's dead.
Okay.
That's the problem.
I will tell you these power rankings, because number one and two are obvious. Number one, Batar.
No,
Batar,
killing him makes no sense.
No, yeah, he has to be alive. So
he has to be alive for it to make any sense.
Batar was tied up. This is Kuvira sacricing.
No,
Batar.
Was she untied?
Yeah,
him,
no, I honestly don't. I think it would work quite fine if he was dead because he saw what she was doing and he knew what she was doing. So you've got the emotional.
Yeah, the impact came from him seeing it and her making this decision. But in order for it to end up having any like stakes to it, and in order for her to like kind of transcend to like be this like more menacing force in the finale, like he'd probably have to be dead. And I think he probably is dead.
Yeah,
I disagree.
Number two, I think, is Mako. Mako was
practically
in the window.
Mako is closest to the window, and if you open the shot up, which you could say, oh, this is just us nitpicking scenes of animation. No, I think this is like intentional. Mako is very close to the beam when it hits. It does hit behind him, but theoretically, a crater in the building or the earth below the building will open up from this, and he is the most likely to be sucked into that.
That
so
would be really funny. Are you guys happy now?
That would be hilarious. Yes.
Mako, I think, is very clearly the next most likely to die.
Yes.
I would expect if no one dies from that, I'm going to be kind of disappointed that you shot a laser beam at the building and nobody.
Yes.
I like how two season episode before the season finales in a row we have ambiguous deaths.
We have ambiguous deaths.
And Tenzin's there too. Tenzin will not be dying. He can fly out of this.
Oh my God. He could.
I don't think Tenzin will die.
I was actually thinking that
Tenzin there's another master really, really now. There's another master.
Tenzin could die, but I don't.
That would carry no.
Okay, number three.
It makes sense, but it wouldn't matter.
Number three. Okay, twins. I think the twins are number three. Sure, yeah.
I like the idea of them sacrificing themselves together.
Yeah, dying together. Okay, so if you look at the shot with the beam again, they are behind Sue and closer to the beam than Sue. So I would say the twins are the next most likely.
No, it's okay,
the beam is going to hit the building and then...
The beam did hit the building. You can see it. You can see it inside the building.
Which one of the twins in Harry Potter dies? It could be like one of them.
Yeah.
Fred is the one who dies.
Wei has to live, though, because Wei was the one who shipped
with Bolin.
Yeah.
That's the one that's going to die.
Bolin will be heartbroken.
Couldn't tell.
Number four, I'll say Asami here. I do think it's a legitimate thing that she is not in the scene.
Thank you.
Allie, she's like
do
fifth
we know
in,
that she's in the building?
We don't know that Asami's in the building. She just was last time, I guess we saw. No, wait, no, didn't. It's not.
They
went to the factory. We never really saw it though.
No, because Asami was like, we're gonna go get the like bunny suits. And,
yeah,
like,
yeah. So they could have already left with them.
Not the bunny suits.
Whatever they are,
hummingbird. That's when they made the plan to go kidnap Batar. And why would Asami leave her factory if she's trying to get the suits up and running? And then they return with Batar. So I'm assuming
like her and
Asami is still there.
Her, Varric, and Julie are.
Yeah,
I mean they could all die.
Yeah, Varric and Julie. Yeah. Okay,
I think Julie probably is like I'm gonna sacrifice myself for
no.
It's very accurate. I don't want it to happen. But
the thing
I think
that's okay. So there's gonna be some romantic.
Wait, also time out. Where's Bolin?
I'm pretty sure Bolin's farther up on this list. Like,
where is he? I don't see him in the shot.
I'm pretty sure he was like one of the
dead.
People who fell.
Him and Asami are dead.
Like, I think that's very legitimate. They built him up.
He's there
as a self-sacrificing character.
He is.
I think he's ahead of. I think he's ahead of Korra. Like, because if you look at the shot where Mako is looking out the window, he's definitely there.
Oh, yeah. Let me go back to that shot. True. I would say. Wait. So what were we on? Four. Asami is four. Five. We'll say Tenzin.
That's lower than I expected.
Because
Sue would be higher.
Yeah, Bolin. Okay, Bolin and Bumi and some random airbender.
Bumi's not gonna die.
Okay, Bumi's not gonna die. Who cares about Bumi?
Okay. Well, no.
So wait, who did I say? Five. Bolin. Well, we thought Bolin was gonna die before his arc could come to an end. Six. Wait, no. Said Tenzin. Five. Tenzin. Six. Bolin. Seven. Sue. Basically, the least likely to die is Korra, right? Because we know Korra is alive in the finale. Okay. Anyone else
she
could be.
She can't die until the end.
Yeah, also
her
she's
still in danger, according to the description of the episode.
Yeah, but the description could be
biggest,
wrong.
That's the biggest trick of all. Korra dies in this episode.
See, I think a lot of people are like, obviously no one's dead because it's the episode before the finale, and also we don't see them in the shot, but The show is trying to frame it in a way which makes you think that, because Lynn says, I'll go check for survivors, right? Like, survivors. That's implying that most people are dead, so
yeah,
I don't know.
I think
that would make sense. What if they did kill Cora off in this episode, and then,
I would laugh so hard.
I mean,
I would
cry. You
harder.
You would cry. I think
figure out how to do it without, no.
I think me and Mel are going to discuss this, post-specific episode discussion, but basically, there's probably a good chance of Cora dying in the finale. Me and Mel maybe think so. I don't know. We'll see.
In the finale,
Mel's
I think it's a good chance.
Mel's
in,
thinks.
Like, the show.
Cora's going to die
first. Okay, let's get into the specific episode. Other than we've given you the death power rankings. Do you agree? Let us know. I think
Kaya
I don't agree.
By the way, support for Mako dying. I just think that there's some support there. I think Mako might. I don't know. Someone close to Cora dying would be something that makes sense.
Yes, they're like,
you know what I mean? And they're not going
to die. I don't think someone
That's
has to.
That's what it would
but...
be, though, if they fridged Mako. Like,
yes.
That would not be fun. Okay. Okay, Kuvira's Gambit, written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Colin Heck, storyboarded by Olga, Eugene, Hyunju, and Natasha. Mel outlined the episode for us. Thank you, Mel. Act 1, we get the clip we got last week, which was... Oh, by the way, I'm not very confident that a clip will be going up tonight for the finale. Nick literally just got the episode like yesterday or the day before, so I'm skeptical they would have had time to make a clip. Okay. That being said, I think they get different revisions of the episode, so maybe they took the color corrected version. I don't know how it works. Anyway,
I know we definitely know that there's different like sound, like because in the clips they miss some background music.
Oh, really?
Often, yeah.
Just watch
Ooh.
Them. Put
they
it up
did
with
that.
No sound.
They did that last week too with the Beifong clip. It was shorter than what appeared in the episode. Yeah. So.
What do you mean it was shorter?
Extra dialogue.
Was there?
No.
I swear there
was.
No, there wasn't.
I don't think so.
Definitely not. But there was...
just me? Okay.
Yeah, it's just you. There was... you've noticed sound design differences? Because that makes
yeah.
sense.
Oh, yeah,
if they took the clip from the non-audio leveled
like,
version.
It,
yeah.
Like, specifically, I remember when the clip showed Prince Wu with his coronation, there was none of this majestic music in the clip.
Majestic.
Okay.
Majestic.
So, and I've
yeah.
seen that a few times since.
So it's very possible the finale... What?
No sound.
No sound, yeah. I mean, it's they cut it closer to this than the previous week, so it's like no music.
It's almost like we've had to deal with that before, an episode going up.
That's really annoying that they would take the clip from the non-finished episode. That pisses me off. I'm kind of, I don't know, it worries me that Nick might just upload the wrong version of the episode.
New.
Anyway.
I'm on phase
okay.
with them now.
Act 1. So yeah, the clip from the episode, and basically it's, they say that they need to take back... Republic City. This is something we didn't previously know, but was very easily assumed based on the Queen last season and based
There's
on
one
the map.
Guy who doesn't have Batar's haircut.
Yeah, what? What is with
yeah,
that,
like,
dude?
Look, everyone loves Batar and needs to look
Yeah,
because
at first I'm thinking, okay, it's like the military style.
I'm pretty
but
sure
no,
they just all want to be.
They literally
they all
want
to date Kuvira.
So
yeah,
exactly. They all want to be her fiance.
I'm pretty sure Kuvira made that. Rule
a thing
in the first place.
Like,
but then, like, what happens
have
to that one guy who doesn't have that haircut? Then
there's
he
one, and
that's
why
he's
right in front of us too.
There's a reason he's in the back.
Yeah,
so he's going to be important.
And we get the whole we're going to get married and rule the empire together. And Batar's like, I love you, and Kuvira does not
say I love you,
but it comes
like,
back
okay.
later in the episode in a great way.
Thanks. I love you. Thanks.
Thanks,
yes,
yeah.
Thanks.
I love you, Reddit.
Meeting with Raiko, they've evacuated 18 families. Cora's like, that's not a lot. Thank you, Cora. Yep. It is a voluntary evacuation. Sue and Bolin come in. Raiko's like, why do you keep interrupting my important meetings?
What is stupid. Raiko is so dumb.
That's my favorite Raiko line ever. So why do you keep interrupting my important meetings? The sense I get with Raiko is that he loves, like, that he's important. Like,
yeah,
I
no,
really
he
get
he
that
loves
sense.
You when
he's
like,
not...
Oh. Like even in the surrender scene, like the scene where Batar doesn't show up, he's still like he doesn't seem happy, but he still seems composed and stuff. I think
yeah.
it's because he's pleased that he's part of this important surrendering.
Yeah,
like
he likes
that's the impression I get. Yeah,
he invited all the parties.
Seriously though, that I think that's interesting characterization. Like that's definitely what I get from that.
Wow, really?
Yeah. No, seriously. So I also don't think Reiko's evil. I just think he's
Reiko's
just
not a
He's just a guy. Like, I don't know.
Consider him a character.
He's fine.
He's been in the show a lot. I don't know.
I consider him a character.
He's been in the show too much. Okay.
He's just been a tool bag.
Yeah, he's just been a tool bag.
They talk about the weapon. Julie comes in and she says stuff, and they're like, "Yep, we're not going to question the fact that Julie betrayed us at all. And now she's back. You know, it's just we accept her at face value. Yeah,
Julie's fine.
Yeah, she's fine. Okay.
Julie was probably the favorite part of this.
The close up on her face when she was talking was great.
Okay, time to give huge props to the writers of the show for once. Jeff last week after the episode pointed out that there's an easy way to just completely subvert Kuvirikum coming to Republic City is that the weapon she had is on rail lines, and you just destroy the rail lines to Republic City, and she can't get there, and she can't bring the weapon, and problem solved. And I was like, you know what, they're just going to ignore that. They've done this in the past. But no, they address the logical inconsistency, and they, in fact, use that to advance the plot.
Lynn said it.
So they're going to...
Who cares?
And they did the whole, like, we're not going to blow it yet until we get people out of the city.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually really like how they approached this.
Logic in a television show. Yes.
Cora, I don't know. This was much more logically done than the book one finale. This is Josh's episode. I mean, this is a decision that they're going to talk about, but the whole writer's room. But this setup is obviously very similar to the book one because it's in Republic City and it's like a big war in Republic City. But I think this is more well done. It's more established what's happening like that. Yeah. They're going to force a mandatory evacuation. You get the Varric and Julie scene. Julie apologizes.
Oh my gosh, I love this scene.
And says
we're
talking about Julie. And tries to save Varric. That's literally what we're doing right now.
Yes. Yes. So, I hate those bangs, though. I want to attack them.
I'm a little iffy on the hair, but her outfit
her outfit is adorable. Wait.
She tells Varric,
like Boland's outfit and Julie's outfit go very well together.
Oh,
is this a new show?
Varric and Julie.
Julie says Varric means the world tour. Varric says you need to get back to work or something. She just keeps talking.
I was so excited. I was like ready to jump up and down.
She will say them.
Did you jump up and down in bed though?
Wanted to.
Okay, you should have.
She did exactly what I wanted her to do.
And Julie says, "You're not your assistant. I need to be treated as your equal." And then Varric.
She's literally towering over him.
And then
literally become Pepper Potts. She'll soon be the CEO of his company.
She is. Yes. Varric's
become. She was her the whole time.
Varric's like, I don't know. And then Bolin's like head slap because Bolin's very involved in shipping the two.
Which is really funny because Bolin completely was terrible at his relationship. Bolin
knows other
relationships.
He's
trying to have commentary on their relationship.
I mean, at least Bolin is putting forth some effort into his relationship and admitting that maybe I screwed that up just a little bit.
I mean,
Varric's just completely oblivious.
In book three, Varric was like, Bolin, can I give you some relationship advice? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
You need the relationship advice.
Exactly. Mako making the emergency evacuation.
God, no one cares.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to say. It's interesting how much that Mako, I have no sympathy for the character Mako, because this is basically him at the scene, so I don't
I want to know why Lynn is like Mako.
I think that's why Dylan hates Mako so much, is because he's so logical and he's very methodical. I don't know how you explain that, but he's very
he's methodical.
I like this characterization.
Like, the math problem can come to life.
What's interesting is I don't think what he was saying was wrong at all. It's just because it was Mako, we had to make it into an awful situation.
Take out your evacuation.
Also, why was Mako the one to do it in the first place?
Yeah, why wasn't Lynn doing it?
Yeah, Lynn's like, here, Mako. Like, no, Lynn, every time you let Mako do something, something bad
Mako's
happens.
Like, no, I got this. I know the evacuation handbook by
Mako
he's like, I got this, guys. Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me if he asks. He's like, don't worry, I memorized. And she's like, you okay?
Wait, did he say that? I missed.
No,
that.
That's
no, but you can.
He also has it open in front of him. So.
Even Lynn's oh my god.
I don't know. I really like Mako in this scene.
I really like Mako too.
The only
it's
one.
It's ridiculous.
I can't believe there's an evacuation handbook. Like, no one has that.
Why did they actually distribute an evacuation handbook to everyone? Like, what?
Like, how does that work? You get off the train. Here's your evacuation handbook.
I guess.
Welcome to Republic City. Like, that doesn't happen.
Anyway, now Wu makes his speech, and he couldn't go to the bathroom by himself. But if we let fear control us, none of us will ever be able to go to the bathroom, and then
it's
we
the
all
best
lose.
Speech.
But the people of Republic City aren't losers.
That I would say over the phone, or like not the phone, over the radio if I was really drunk.
Well, that's basically Wu.
But Wu's not drunk, so hey, I'm like... really confused.
Anyway. No. And we're going to get you out of here safe and sound. And Wu is great. And the phone stopped ringing. And we get the pan to, we get to see, what's his name? Gomu, take the cop out by hand. Yeah. And that was good. And we saw, Tano, obviously.
And the other, seen,
the lady who, yeah, like,
the bathroom thing is like, it's, so like, at, it sounds juvenile,
Alex,
but.
Shut up.
Wow, you're rude.
I'm gonna kill you.
Don't tell people. Wow, okay. You two have a great relationship. So, I think it sounds juvenile, but it's actually referring to reunion, though, right? Like, when Mako, Wu needed Mako to go to the bathroom. And I think if you look at it from that angle, it's, like, less juvenile.
I just don't enjoy the whole, you're gonna make a good king. Like, no, I don't want this king.
Oh, yeah, and then we get the, so you're gonna stupid. Make, you might actually make a good king, kid, says
Lin. Like, no, bum, maybe he dies.
Let's, this
make
is an,
a good figure.
This is an example of, let's tell you the thesis statement of this, the point of what we're doing. Yeah, that's great. Okay, thank you, Lin. Thank
overthrow
you,
overthrow the dictator to have a slightly
but
not
that,
as bad.
That wasn't the worst the line of the episode. I don't remember the worst line.
No, the worst line of the episode is 25 stories tall. That is
no,
the worst.
Yeah. That's not the worst. There's something worse. Okay.
Like, no offense, but that thing's way bigger than 25 stories tall. It's taller than this mountains.
Tenzin comes in and Pema and kids want to stay and help. Rohan is gone though, so
I guess they can't
also, yeah,
eat.
Wait, who did they leave the baby with?
He just abandoned the baby.
An accolade
well,
babysitter, obviously.
When he first
said
it, I thought he meant like Rohan's with the accolades doing things, and I was like, he's like,
yeah. I don't say him. I was like, wait, he's like 2 years old.
No, but the accolades have him and they evac'd with him.
They have him. Okay. Yeah.
That would make the
Pima. He's been
I figured
aching.
Pima would be a lot less chill about her baby being off with an accolade.
That was my thing.
Pima's great.
I mean,
Pima's
she probably
great,
knows these accolades pretty well.
Which
like,
accolade?
She lives there.
She
so
was
she
an
just,
acolyte.
Like,
yeah,
her,
like that's
baby.
Fine.
They're
like, yeah, she was an acolyte. But, like, the city's being invaded. She's like, oh, my youngest child's
well,
crossed
the safest the place to send him is away
from and we've so, seen Pima be very calm and, like, stressful
I'm surprised
before.
She's letting.
Like,
what I'm more surprised
giant...
by is that she's letting her other kids stay and fight.
Yeah, especially.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that.
I'm just really glad Pima gets to go and do things.
I mean,
oh, yes.
Dylan,
well,
I have an update to the death thinger.
Yes.
Thinger.
Okay, because of Jinora's eye look in this scene, that's foreshadowing Milo snuffing it.
No.
Jinora snuffing
Milo. I reject that
no.
proposal. That although Milo is the worst character on the show, and that would be great. Now, I mean, it
Milo
wouldn't be great,
like
but if anyone
old,
has
so
to
all
go,
all his jokes make perfect sense.
Yeah,
okay.
But
they're still annoying.
Like we didn't
have
need
you
the
ever,
fart.
9 year old boys
you know?
Are annoying. This is a fact.
I babysat like 20 of them. I understand
at once.
But have you lived?
I was a camp counselor.
Yeah, you lived with.
Oh, you were a camp counselor.
Okay, we get the is this the beginning of the evacuation montage scenes? I actually okay. So
is it really a montage? It's like really
it's just like two shots. So
does it move? So no, it's not a montage.
Thank you, Ellie.
Well, it's just various, but yeah, it's like a clip show.
It's
yeah,
just a
it's weird. They're
like they
distorted in 3D.
They're They I actually really like how they present this. I think it's a good decision to not waste scenes on the evacuation,
yeah,
but still
bad.
Showing
it was just,
them.
Like,
it was really weird. Yeah, like I just wasn't expecting.
I think
to me,
Brian and the directors always make good decisions with like when to do these like atypical things, and I think this was a fairly
I think
good
what
decision.
What bothered me the most about it was the sound. I don't
yes,
think there
the
was
sound.
Enough. I don't think there was enough music behind it because it was very confusing
yeah,
what was happening.
Yes,
thank you.
I don't know.
It was just
no
a quiet shot
actually,
of these 3D renders.
I thought it froze on me for like 5 seconds, and I was like, "Oh, just."
It was interesting. I don't know. I like the concept of Wu and Pema evacuating people.
I liked
like
it the second time. The first time, I was like, "What is going on?"
It is confusing. There's a lot of parts that
I didn't think
very
it was confusing. I just thought it was like okay.
I don't know if it's confusing. It's like. I like if you like zone out for a little bit, then you miss.
Yeah, why would
here.
You zone out though?
Because I don't know. Because lots happening, and who cares about Wu and Bema? Exactly. Okay.
Wow.
Care
like,
about
wow.
Pima. Jeez.
Well, Wuko
I feel like
though.
You're so like
yes,
Wuko. Not consistent with your opinions about characters.
Wuko though, I know I like Pema, but she's just very not important. Okay. General Iroh is back, although he doesn't talk
speaking
for a while.
Not, important.
Not speaking of the least important character in the show.
He definitely died.
Raiko is moved to Air Temple Island, and we get I wish I was still back at my desk. Well, no, this is why you're here. So even though we told you this before we moved you, we're going to tell you this while you're here so the audience can know with bad expository dialogue. The crew wants to take... They really do struggle with lines like this, like just explaining things to the audience. They do it a lot of times in ways which are inconsistent with how characters would actually talk in times like this. Like, this line doesn't really make sense. It's not a big deal, but it just happens sometimes.
I think it makes sense.
It's one of the reasons I love Battlestar Galactica, because they don't do that.
Do they just, like, show stuff?
They just go ahead and don't tell the audience.
Yeah.
There's actually no
the way they talk gives you information without them having to spell it out.
Yeah, right? Yeah. This is one of the... I mean, the writing has definitely improved on Korra, but this is still a fault.
It is also Nickelodeon. Just keep that in mind.
I mean, that is basically irrelevant to the writing process. I mean, they provide feedback, but they basically also ignore it. The crew...
I like how they, like, put all their computers and stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that. They moved machines in there. It's interesting. And I guess they're not computers.
Oh, I thought was already there.
Yeah, what do they have? What is their technology? Like, this is supposed to be
the
20s.
Just
the
radio, no?
It's no, just radio.
They had the call board.
That's all
board.
They have.
No, they had a large machine. They had a large machine just sitting
there. All
they
have is radio.
It's not clear what it
was. All they have is radio.
They want to take out the weapon and...
No!
Oh
my god!
Raiko's like, okay. And he overrides them, because I guess he is in charge. Kuvira's army is, like, a week early, like a jerk. The Colossus, I assume. Okay. Thank you, Mel, for that. They're there.
Typical Kuvira.
But I think it's interesting. I think it's notable to talk about how they present the war in this episode, because... Brian, in the book 2 commentaries, was talking about how they can't, like, show a full-scale war because of how just complicated the animation is. Just like, they can't show so many armies and stuff like that and animate all of them. And they basically have a full-scale war here, so I'm surprised they wrote this. That being said...
It's like the first episode, though.
I mean, they haven't...
Not the first episode. I mean, like, since, like, the beginning of this book.
Yeah, well, they've been
like,
leading
to
this, but...
They can't show them fighting. It's too
yeah,
many.
Yeah, right.
It's like, they have the whole army, but the only thing doing anything is a Colossus.
Right, so that's the thing. That's the thing of note. When they show the establishing shots of the entire army, they're just background paintings. They don't animate it at all. So this is how they approach this. I like that they're doing this instead of wasting... like animation on other shots. Like, yes, it's fine to have establishing background shots. The best produced animated films of all time, the Studio Ghibli films, have many establishing just background paintings that don't move at all, and it's one of the tropes involving Miyazaki movies. It's like, hey, nice background painting. But yeah, no, this is fine. You can do this, and I like how they approach it. Could the act two...
Oh, also this first scene, it's like the first on-screen death from Kuvira's army.
When does the night scene happen? Is that
that's
that?
Right now.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's discuss that one.
Are.
So this scene is excellent.
Yeah, what did you guys think? Because
loved
the reveal.
Yes, it was great.
So it's dumb. Who cares? It's a dumb concept.
Yeah,
cast,
I think
it's
dumb.
But,
oh, God, it's stupid.
But
no,
the way
really
they, again, the way they handle it, like, they treat this like an anime, and it's good. It comes on, it shoots the thing down. I don't know if it counts as a death. Like, we don't.
It
no,
does.
Like,
there were,
I
like,
mean, they,
20 people in that base.
Yes. We don't really see them die, though.
But they still die.
It's kind of unclear. No, that's... We'll have,
oh my God.
We'll have that a few times. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I really liked it. It was. I love... Just the big thing with me for the Colossus is there's two big things. One is just the scale of it. It's so much bigger than everything else. And this is a really good decision, even though it makes it more silly. But it wouldn't be as menacing because we already have mecha tanks, we already have benders, like, so you need something to be just so imposing for it to seem like a real threat. And the other thing, again, is the sound design, and then it takes down the thing, and then we have the fire shot of it at night. I also love the decision to have it first appear at night. It was just excellent work on the scene and with the Colossus in general. I mean, we're calling it the Colossus. They don't call
it
that.
I think it's the Colossus.
They call it the Day of the Colossus is next episode, so we're going to call this
the Colossus.
Okay. So act two, everyone sees Kuvira's army, they see the mech suit, Korra, and Mel says it's literally a kaiju suit. Kuvira begins firing at them. Oh yeah, so then she's okay.
Why did we skip over the bison scene?
This is the bison scene. So Kuvira fires at them on the bison. So
I thought this reveal was better than the night scene.
What,
like,
reveal?
It coming around the corner.
I guess.
But them on the bison just really reminded me of Avatar, and it made me sad.
I'm,
yeah.
So, it's we need to discuss how Kavira just clearly just wants to kill Cora. She just fires at her right away.
She doesn't care.
So here's the thing with, I actually think they could make a bigger deal out of this in the finale. We'll see if they do, but out of all the villains we've had, it makes the most sense that Kuvira would want Cora dead, because if Kuvira takes over Republic City, kills Cora 15 years from now, or whatever, if she rules all the Earth Kingdom, the next Earth Avatar, she finds the Earth Avatar, and I actually want to compare this to China and Tibet right now. Not the Dalai Lama, but one of the other Lamas, the Panchen Lama or something like that, since China's taken over Tibet, has died and reincarnated, and China says they found the new one, they took him, now he's an important figurehead in the Chinese government. Like, this is, it's like, if you control a region when someone reincarnates, you can take over the new
reincarnation.
You can take the new reincarnation and then use them for your own purposes. It's actually
and
something.
And then they just basically leave a giant open window for fan fiction forever.
So this
I feel
it may.
Like Kuvira Cora dies. Doesn't really baby crying. You're laughing. The Avatar is that powerful
yes,
anymore.
Yes, you're Kuvira laughing.
That yeah, I don't get the impression Kuvira
like,
cares
like,
that much. Yeah, about the Avatar.
No.
It's gonna be like the show ends with Kuvira laughing maniacally with baby crying in the background.
No, it's gonna be like the Lion King. She shows the baby.
Yeah, my point is, like, so it would make sense that Kuvira wants to kill Cora, but I don't get the impression she, like, actively wants to kill Cora, you know? Like, I don't think she cares.
But, like, from this, yes, you
yeah.
do.
Yeah,
from this, I'd say you do.
Well, she
like,
sees...
Avatar with you? Oh, she is. Let me blow up the building you're in. I love you, Avatar. Bye. Like, she clearly wants to kill Cora, really.
Yeah,
she
but...
She very much has it in for Cora.
It's interesting, right? So, that's the question. She says, is the Avatar with you? So, does she want to kill Cora so much, or is it the people surrounding Cora just
I'm
in general?
Sure it's Cora.
It's clear Cora.
Because we
I'm
never.
Sure she wants to kill the people who stand in her way.
She probably cares about Cora as a symbol.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing though. We don't get a Zaheer in episode 2 scene with Kuvira. We don't get a the end of the reign of the age of the Avatar. So we don't know if she actually cares about ending.
Well, also, I mean, just strategically, Cora is the biggest threat to her.
But yeah, I think it's more of a strategic thing, right? Yeah. So I don't get the impression.
No, I don't think she cares about Cora herself. I think it's honestly what you
it's
said.
Like
she can kill the Avatar, she'll control the next one.
So yeah, but basically, Kuvira takes over Republic City, she kills Cora, she basically controls the world for the next 50 to 100 years, right? So she controls the biggest landmass, and I mean, if she can abolish the United Republic, the only ones that stand in her way are the Fire Nation. Like, this is the closest thing that we have, Zach. She's doing much better than Ozai right now, basically. In one season.
Well, she's doing Ozai
right. In one season,
everyone
yeah.
did better than Ozai.
Like this is what you get, Ozai. Okay, she lets them go, and it's like, oh, they're
okay,
gonna tell.
Can we talk
Republic
about
City.
The control scheme?
Okay, talk about
yes.
that. Yes.
Okay.
So, like, if you were gonna have traditional like staff of pilots all piloting this thing, it would be so hard to be like unified and smooth motion. Like, who's like, you need one mind controlling the whole thing. This is the whole point of the kaijus and the, the Jaegers in Pacific Rim. Mm-hmm. So she does this with metal bending. It's awesome with like the spheres and everything. And it's just so geeking out about
amazing.
It.
Amazing. Yes, same.
Day. I was amazed.
I was freaking out. I was like, this is amazing.
Because
I thought it was going to be like the control stream.
See, that was what my thing was. Like, before, like, we saw the inside, I thought it was just gonna be, like, a bunch of guys, and then just Kuvira, like, sitting in a chair, like, blow her up or something.
How freaking lazy she is that she's literally got a lever right there, but she'll metal bend it.
No, I really like how
she
metal bends.
Because she can't go the extra 2 inches to just grab it.
Look, sometimes it's difficult.
That's what bending is for, so you can just get stuff.
Is it? Because
it is.
Also,
yeah.
It's cool that, like, when it's walking, she's not doing anything. Like, they automated
that. Yeah, I thought she would be controlling it with her mind.
When she needs... like more control, she just takes over.
It's so great.
It's pretty amazing.
Just everything about this. I also like that.
So how does it walk then? Does someone else control it?
I think they automated it, or they've got some people.
They could have pilots in the legs and stuff like that. You know, I don't know. I also just love how Kuvira.
I am the light switch man.
Kuvira stays in the Colossus the whole time. Like it seems like the best place to be, and she's like right. She's the force of the invasion and in like the safest place all at once. Like it's like if she was on the ship with Batar, like that wouldn't be good. So you know, she's like he can go over there.
If he was on the ship with Batar, he probably wouldn't have gotten kidnapped.
Yeah, they would have just stopped them. Okay. Korra and Gang return to our Temple Islands, and they warn them about Kuvira the Weapon. 24 stories tall. Thanks for the estimation.
25
says Mills.
Stories.
25 stories tall.
That's the dumbest line, I swear.
To me, that's equivalent. To me, that's equivalent to 25. What would be 25 stories tall? What's the context for that?
A building.
I don't know. Something about.
Oh my goodness.
No one will understand this context whatsoever. But the Cathedral of Learning. At a place that I don't go to school, it's 40. I want to say it's 42 stories. So only about halfway up is 25 stories. That's not that tall. Looking at the scope,
this thing
of that
is
building,
taller than 25 stories.
That thing, that thing is way the mountains yeah. around it. Okay, it's
much
massive.
Thank
so,
you.
So Korra just can't math. Okay,
to me, this is like the 20s dialogue.
That's
that,
why Korra
is like, this is
how
tall.
Do they? Like, how do
they literally just wanted
it?
Us to think? Wow, that's
what
big.
Does it run on?
But it's like people are gonna look that up. And
it runs
like,
on, it runs on spirit vine energy probably. They're making
like,
a battery originally
runs,
for
I just
it.
Wish we didn't
that's
have
smaller
this
than
line.
The colossal titan from Attack on Titan, so it's not big enough.
Asami and Bolin go to the factory, and Sue goes with them. Korra heads to the front lines, and airbenders everywhere. Weird montage again. Korra and Iroh at the front lines, and then Iroh speaks. Eventually, which I missed at first.
With me. Just realized that it was Dante Bosco. And
I really hope they got Dante Bosco in for just this one line, and then Nairo doesn't talk the rest of the finale. I would be happy
Please?
With that. That would be... That would...
I'm still really disappointed that he didn't voice Honora.
I know,
yes,
right?
Me too.
I'm still really mad that we have no identity for Honora's mother.
Yes.
I mean, we know it's Suki.
Have you seen
so.
Her face?
I mean, it's definitely me.
Kuvira arrives.
I just need official word to shut Dylan up.
Yes, same.
Like, let's get this fic done. So, by the way, I won the bet with Mel, as discussed on the podcast 2 weeks ago or 1 week. I don't remember. So, Mel is writing a Zuki fic, and it will be posted on Tumblr.
Okay,
believe me, it will be posted on Tumblr. Okay. Kuvira arrives. Reiko orders Kuvira to leave. She's like, no, and shoots at the city. I also like this scene, like the standoff. Kuvira's like,
yeah, it shows you like how pathetic their lines are. Like, they have like three rows of barbed wire.
Yeah, no, I love the barbed wire.
Yes, it was great.
Trench.
Which is actually interesting because they had a good point that Iroh can stop her armies, and that would have worked. But unfortunately,
See,
the game has changed.
Because
that was what the barbed wire was for, to make it fall down and trip.
No, that
but,
was
like,
for the armies, Allie.
That would be a really good.
Yeah, just
like,
put a giant rope out to make it.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. If it falls, you can't get up.
Yeah.
What if that's how they resolve this season?
It can get up because it has all the joints.
Or it's like, wait, if it falls, you can't get up.
It's got all the joints that human
does. Yeah, also they can just open it up, I think.
It's like a turtle.
I bet you like a dollar. I will donate a dollar to the podcast, Dylan, if that's what happens.
Okay, accept
it. No, you owe me a dollar.
These, I like
if
these.
It doesn't happen. I
was gonna say, Britt, what?
Britt, you make these bets where you just do something if something happens and there's no return for
like,
it.
Dylan, I bet you that this will happen. I will give you a dollar.
Varric says this is exactly why I didn't want to build that weapon. Thank you, Varric. That has been established.
Yes.
The airbenders rescue sailors from the sinking ships. Okay, that's an interesting way of phrasing that. Raiko surrenders. Kuvira wants the army, and Korra turned over to her.
I was just like, I'll give you 3 seconds.
Like, yeah. Play one.
I will count. No, literally, she's like, I will give you 3 seconds to hand her to me, like personally, deliver her right in front of me in the next 5 seconds, or I'm blowing the city up.
Yeah. Like,
Here's where
Doctor Evil. Like, really? Come on.
Like, no one's winning in that situation.
Here's where Iroh talks. Find a way to beat that thing. Talking about the suit. No, I think it's the suit, not Kuvira. And Korra meets up with everyone and informs them. Asami says they can cripple the weapon. They realize Batar Jr. will know to take the weapon down because he designed it. And Varric's like, he's a good, better inventor than I thought. And it's like,
he's a good, better inventor.
I think that's kind of lampshading the fact that it doesn't really make sense that he would have designed this. But I don't know. Milo's farts.
I mean, who
whatever.
Else is designing it? I mean, it's clearly top heavy, and it's. Complete walking motion is ridiculous. Like, do you know how hard it is to copy human walking
motion?
Here's our
motion?
Wedding like,
present.
Most
no,
scientists
are
like,
our wedding present.
Technology cannot make a robot
okay,
walk
Allie?
Like a human very well. No. So I really doubt that thing is well put together.
Seems like it would take more than Batar and his little crew.
It would take more than Batar
and his undergrads.
And his undergrads. Yeah. You should follow, what's the blog, Jeff?
Batar PhD student.
Yeah, Batar the PhD student.
Batar the PhD student. Maybe created by one of us. Who knows? it's Jeff's blog. Yeah, no. I love the concept because that's just totally him.
One of many blogs created by
us. Also, follow Chatty Rava, hashtag Chatty Rava.
Yes, Chatty Rava.
Cora, Tenzin, Boomy, Jinora, and Kai
also not
sneak into
anyone.
Batar's airship and snag him. Okay. Okay. So this is like 3/4 of the potential airbending season 4 that I was looking for preseason. This is like, we got your Kai, your Jinora, your Boomy. Is just replace everyone else with Opal.
Where's Iki?
And then this great. Yeah, the Iki didn't come. Cora didn't say Iki. And she just kind of stood
okay,
there.
Let's talk. Unacceptable. Milo had one line and nobody else had lines.
Yeah,
Kai
so
didn't have a line. Jinora
people
had a
who don't.
Line.
Kai, Iki, and Jinora do not talk in this episode.
And then
Kai
Milo
is
does.
Back. We didn't talk about that.
I mean, the first time it was Cora, Tenzin, Boomy, Jinora, and Iki until I looked up and I was like,
oh, it's Kai.
Kai.
Yeah, this is the first episode he's in since
literally right before he came on. I was like, where is he? And then he was like, oh,
okay. By the way, so shippers, Cora, Tenzin, and Boomy go into the ship while Kai and Jinora stay guard on top.
I thought you were making this a ship.
So write a fic about them discussing their feelings on top of the airship.
I thought they were gonna have like a little moment, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought that was the time to do it. They were staying up there.
I mean, not really, considering what's happening right now.
It's the city. If we don't deliver Cora in the next 5 seconds.
I am pleased, though, that we have them standing heroically next to each other. I'm fine with that. I can handle that.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So if Jinora doesn't talk in the finale, I'm going to go berserk.
Yeah,
so
that'll
you know,
be,
just
that'll be a
this is, I can accept this episode, but
no, she's
everyone needs
talk,
to at least
Tenzin's
have one
die.
Line.
Tenzin's going
to
die, and then the epilogue is Jinora taking over the Air Nation. No, seriously, like it might actually happen. Yes. This is what we thought would happen last season, right? We thought Tenzin was dead because Jinora's arc says that she can. Yeah, but that being
honestly,
said,
I would have been happier if he died then than if he died.
The problem with this is I don't think that's going to happen because they haven't presented Jinora as a leader this season. She's just been part of the family, so like I don't think that's. Where they're going.
A damsel in distress.
Yeah, it's
well,
unfortunate.
A
what?
Yes.
Jinora needs a statue.
Yeah. Yes.
Statue.
True. Okay. Act 3. Batar says Kagura will kill them when she finds.
We skipped the whole kidnap scene.
Yeah,
well,
they
that's
snag
it. They snag him. That's it.
But it's great. It's so much fun because Cora's being
there
all cute
no
with her signals.
Scene. It takes 10 seconds.
It does take 10 seconds. They
I
put him in a sack and they bring him.
We talk about how they put him in a sleeping bag.
Well,
and
first
him like a sack of potatoes.
Batar enters the thing on the keyboard, and I was going to look for his password. I can't remember what it was.
Wait, we have to talk about how Jinora and Kai just like drag him like a sack of flour.
Yeah, they take him after. Yeah. So they're discussing their feelings on top, and then they're rudely interrupted by Batar being thrown.
They're
rudely
interrupted by a war. How inconvenient.
Oh my goodness, we need the Jin Kai scene in the finale. Okay, Mel, it's going to happen.
Yes.
But,
they're going to make out.
Okay. Power rankings. Most likely couples to have a scene in the finale. Number one, Varric and Julie, obviously. I think they're most likely. Number two, I think two is unclear. Like, Bolin and Opal already had their stuff. I think it might be Jinora and Kai for number two.
Yeah, that would make the most sense. That would make the most sense to have Jinora and Kai, and then...
And then I think three is probably Bolin and Opal, because they'll have some sort of scene. Four would be either... I mean, four, then everything else is unlikely. It's Mako and Cora / Cora and Asami, both of which are... Potential to have a spontaneous scene, but no sort of any sort of. There's
so
been
Mako,
not enough development.
Mako's
going to
die because Mako's dead.
Mako, I think, is dead though, so I think that's unlikely.
Yeah, Mako's gone.
I think Mako's just dead. Sure, that's very unlikely. So I'm going to put Cora and Asami at 4. Okay, act 3.
The finale, the epilogue is they're all at Mako's grave.
I thought that would be Bolin's
please.
Grave, so
oh
it's interesting.
God.
Yeah.
Every season, you think this is the season Bolin dies.
It's true. He should have. Yeah. No, they're at Mako's grave, and instead of discussing Mako, they discuss other things.
Discussing Cora. They're like, Mako, Cora.
What do you think we
are getting married?
That's Cora. Oh my God, Cora and Asami at Mako's funeral.
Should we
serve
Cora and Asami get married?
Wow.
Okay.
No,
they're telling me Cora and I are engaged. That's what happens.
They get married at his grave.
She proposes at his grave.
Oh my
yes.
Goodness. This is a little much. Okay.
Okay. This is awful. It's not.
Cora in the Avatar State threatens Batar, but Batar's like, hi, call your bluff. Sue's going to talk to him. Then they're on the airship over at Temple Island.
I'm going to look over the part where she literally picked him up, and then she didn't need the Avatar State to hold him like that.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was weird. She turned in the Avatar State to pick him up, but then she went out of the Avatar State.
No, she did that to scare him. She did the Avatar Glowy thing to, like, scare him.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
But can she stop lifting grown men? Like every season, I think she's someone done that to at least one.
Someone who's good at gifting, go find gifts from each season and then put them together.
Mare's actually
she just holds up men. What?
Mare is actually pretty good at gifting.
Wow, great. Thank you for paying attention to the podcast.
What?
You're obviously on Tumblr, dude.
No, I'm not. I mean, she said look for someone with giving powers.
Okay.
I'm done. Way to pay attention to the podcast.
Sorry. You know, I'm trying to advance the outline. Sorry, but you guys are discussing gifts. Okay. Honestly, I don't even remember. Oh, okay. So when we get to this great scene, I actually really like the scene where the airship comes up and the two guards walk out. Like,
you have to say it the way I said it.
Where is this?
Oh my god.
They walk out in formation and then they look behind them and Mel says, "Looks like a fool because Batar is missing."
No. I said, "Looks a fool."
What?
Different. Oh.
Looks a fool. Okay.
It looks a fool.
So I love this because it's like how it would happen like in formation on a TV show and then you're just not there behind them. It's like, wouldn't you check to see if he's there before walking out like this? I don't know.
No, because that would be uncool.
Yeah, exactly. They're just being all cool. And then
they're just assuming that he's coming.
Because Raiko's like, is there a problem? They're like, no, sir. No, just
Jeff, are these Robbie and Steve?
No.
Where's Robbie and Steve?
Yeah, where's Robbie? Oh, they're in the mecha tank.
Were they in this episode?
They're on Kuvira's colossal whatever.
Are they though? No, I know we're guessing, but like you could actually tell if they were.
I mean, they probably are.
They probably.
I don't know where they are.
Why would they be with Katara? They're with Kuvira because they're her last.
Because they're the yeah. But so we need to see which ship is canon exactly. After Batar dies, one of them will swoop in. Yeah. That's
Kuvi.
It's definitely Kuvi. And then the third guy comes running out with like long strides, and that's really great too.
Yes.
And like I said, Raiko's still composed through all of this.
I have to watch that scene again. I don't remember this.
The reason I like the scene is because it's like it's like comical without being like overtly silly. Like I don't know.
I agree. I think it was a really good use of situational comedy without pointing out that it was situational comedy.
Yeah, I agree. I was pretty impressed here.
Because they're like, guys, he's not here. What do you mean he's not here?
And they're like, shh, we're working on it, Raiko.
And then the woman comes out. It's like, what should I tell her? But it's not like in a panicked like.
Oh my god!
It's just what should I tell her? And then Raiko's like, oh my goodness, you fools!
When you're a host and like the table's not ready and you like have a seven top that's mad at you and you're like,
Brit talks about restaurant stuff. Okay,
and there are people out there who are like, yes, I understand.
Yeah, there's like yes. Tell Brit if you understand her opinion.
Yeah, okay. Send an email. We'll make Dylan read them.
Dylan doesn't answer his asks like a jerk.
Not if they're dumb. Sue is speaking to Batar. Wow. Sue tells him it's madness. Okay, she did say that, didn't she?
No, she did say it was madness.
Batar says it's wrong that people take things from you. How many must lose their lives until Kuvira is satisfied? Batar says it doesn't have to cost any lives if everyone would surrender. Sue apologizes for whatever she did to hurt him. Kuvira is my family now, says Batar. And then Korra's like, obviously, we should...
And Sue cries. She made his mom cry.
This was my favorite scene.
Korra tells Batar she will keep him from Kuvira for the rest of his life if he doesn't convince Kuvira to back off.
I have messed up, and I want to know where she got that idea.
It's a really good idea.
Like, it's a great idea. I don't know how I feel about the execution. I don't know. I felt really weird about this. I was like, I don't know if this is stupid or brilliant.
It was brilliant.
Because, honestly, I thought she was going to say something much stupider, but I was like, oh, that's actually a pretty...
decent way.
Yeah, it was a smart idea. True. Like, the execution was kind of weird. Like, I was like, I also want you to step on me, please.
Like, literally, she said... She'll keep him a hostage forever unless he convinces Kuvira to knock it off. And the way she presented it too was really logical because she's like, we're not telling you to dismantle your entire empire. Just stay away from Republic City. Like, let it be.
Yeah.
So
it was. I don't know. It's interesting that Korra thinks of this, does this, and then is presented menacingly by.
It was pretty menacing. I mean, it's a decent, like, impressed. I have no choice. This is what I'm going to do to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's this better line, than though. I would have done, so.
Yeah.
Like, I want to come back to this line.
I really liked wherever.
Fodder, shipping, Makora, or Kurosami?
What?
Well, see, this is why I want to come back to this at the end of the discussion, because okay. I feel like people are going to think of it.
I will say, Cora had the worst and best line of the episode. Best line, wherever I run, I will
25.
Take you. Like, yeah, then 25 stories.
No, there was a worst. I can't remember what it was, but there was a worst
line. That was the worst line. Best line, I think, is wherever I run, whatever she says, wherever I run, I'll take you with me.
That it sounds like she's trying to, like...
No, that's what I'm saying. That was the best line of the episode for me.
Hmm. She's, she's stealing.
Cora has the best line and the worst
Who
line.
Who ships Batar and Cora?
Apparently, no. Cora does.
What is the yeah. Yes.
Back on
wherever
the airship.
You go,
Kuvira,
I go, you'll follow.
Kuvira radios wanting to talk to Batar. Raiko says, let him talk to her. Batar radios Kuvira and asks her to back off Republic City. Yeah, and return to the Empire so they can be together. Kuvira is full of crap. Okay.
It's just like, what is happening?
So this is... So then she switches off the thing, asks him to track it.
No one look at that typo.
And, yeah, no.
That's great.
And this is like the scene in Mockingjay Part 1 when...
Oh my god.
When she's talking to Snow.
Except,
and,
well.
Except on the other side.
Except that hurt me a lot.
And then Snow's like, you think I didn't. No, spoilers. Okay.
Wow.
No, yeah. Literally, you might as well keep going because you already just gave away.
I didn't spoil anything. Okay. And,
yeah, you did.
That's what happened, though. The scene. I like the scene a lot. And Kuvira is like, putting on a show for him, actually, because, like, while still... She's,
well, if, no, because you...
I don't think it's a show. A lot of her expressions...
Her
yeah, she really... This is hurting Kuvira.
Oh, I don't think it is.
Well, what she's...
I think the evidence of that is that she muted the microphone to tell them to track the location.
What she... Yeah, really? Yeah, but... Yeah. Yeah, because the only thing he's... It's not like the others can hear her on the line. Only Batar can
hear I think
it.
She really wanted Batar to actually believe and know that she loved him, even though this is happening. Because, like, in theory, she would blow him up, and he really, like, would just see the gun, and it would be over. You know, no one hit him.
She loved him, but she
no, I think Kuvira does. I think Kuvira does love Batar.
Okay,
like,
well, that's a big
right
discussion.
It's interesting because them having Batar didn't really hurt her in any way because he obviously wasn't gonna talk. I mean, she literally, her question was, is the Avatar with you? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, okay. Marched right over there and fired at the building because she cared more about killing Cora than she cared about Batar.
Well, that still doesn't negate the fact that she still loves, she just doesn't love Batar more than she wants to kill Cora.
I totally agree with Mel.
My thing is, those facial expressions, she didn't need to make those. She could have just said whatever she wanted to say, but those facial expressions,
I think she has gratitude to him because he built a lot of her things, and I think she really did like him as one of her followers and her lieutenant. I don't think she had any feelings for him beyond the professional and beyond what he could achieve for her. I think those expressions were her losing a lieutenant, losing an engineer, losing her chance to make her last name Beifong.
So what the show is trying to present is that...
I've mentioned this before, but like in the film, it's really telling the scenes where a character makes an expression or says things that are not visible to other people but are visible to the audience, and those are things that...
No, yeah, creators, that's no, yeah, yeah, yeah.
For characterization purposes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
that's
they
a good
do this
point,
a lot
right?
in like live action film.
Yeah. So and this is what I'm
Kuvira,
trying.
Like, no one sees her to make this facial expression. Like she says this, and it's she looks like for a second like she's going to cry, and I think this is
the
characterization of her becoming colder. Like I think she started off with very good intentions. We talked about this previously, and she's just continuing to go down this road, and Batar was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back.
It's like, how far will I go?
Will I go? Yeah. And now there's nothing that's going to ever hold her back. She's going to go.
So
and also, there's another thought. Corrupted.
In terms of what the show is presenting, it's what she says is a lie. What she is, not a lie, it's just not necessarily true. What her facial expressions are meant to be signify of her true feelings, though. Whatever those may be. That's pretty clearly what the show is presenting.
Well, I think that another thing we should consider is that she said, you know, the part about what's important is that we get to be together, right? Like that part, we need to spend the rest of our lives together. And I was kind of thinking it could be a kind of like, if Kuvira can't have the ending she wants, like she doesn't like, then she'll just like, so she, yes, she wants to kill Cora, but then also like, if this doesn't work out the way she wants it to, like if no one, you know, if no one can have Batar, if she can't have the ending she wants, she'll kill Batar instead.
I don't know. See,
yeah, wait, what? I'm confused now.
I don't I don't think she was necessarily like forced to do this. Like,
oh, no, she wasn't. But what I'm saying is that there's like there are like I just don't, I think she loved Batar, and I think there are a lot of factors going into this scene.
So I think obviously
she doesn't.
I don't
think she loves anything.
I think obviously she's not.
I agree with Mel.
She at least thinks that she loves him. Does that make sense?
The situation wasn't so dire that this is like the last resort, right? Like
clearly.
I think the impression I got is that she does like love him, but it's not nearly as much as anything close to her desires for
well,
power in the Empire.
She wouldn't have killed him otherwise. That's so obvious.
But it's like not that it's not like it's like right her love his love for him is like right below that. It's like way below because this isn't like a dire situation. So
she still told him. She still wanted him to know. She's told him I love you. Even though he was going to see
don't
the gun.
Understand.
I think she was keeping him on the line.
Know what acting is? That's the thing. Yeah, she's keeping him on
but
the line.
But my thing was the
she's
facial
making
expression.
Him think.
Well, the thing is the facial expression.
The show is obviously presenting her caring. Like it's just not. It's just very obvious if you look at her face. But the thing is that it's not that she's using this to overcome some dislike. So Kavir's Gambit, as the title, is probably not. So if this is the Gambit, her blowing up the place, that's not a good use of the word because she's really not in a place of disadvantage here. She's still very much in charge of what's going on. Korra was doing something from a place of disadvantage, and they don't do something that's even going to give them that much edge. And then Kuvira is just using this as to further her position, right? It's not like she's desperate. She's just furthering her already good position.
Can I say something about the Gambit?
Yes.
Okay. So I took that as being her, and again, this is coming from a purely professional, purely what Batar can do for her standpoint, because she gave up her engineer. Wow. She gave up her engineer. She gave up the guy who designed the tank. She gave up, you know, her what at the time was her only claim to Zhao Fu in order to kill Korra. Like, she literally, she sacrificed her pawn to get to the queen.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what it refers to.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is what the Gambit is referring to. I don't know if it's an appropriate use or not, but I agree that's what it's referring to.
Yeah, I don't think it's the best title or like the best word usage, but that's what it's referring to.
I mean, their titles aren't always the best.
At least this refers to something in the episode. I also like how it's like it doesn't,
I like how it doesn't have a the or just
Valkuvira's Gambit. It doesn't happen until the end.
Valkuvira's
Gambit.
Okay.
It could have been the Gambit, so.
And then they're there and she fires the thing and it's gorgeously done. And then
who's not there, Asami?
And then Lynn's like, I'll go look for survivors. Reiko's like, oh no.
And Lynn doesn't know. Literally her entire family could be dead. Oh my god.
Yep.
I can't do this.
Except Toph.
Oh, no.
Except Toph.
Yeah.
Yeah, except Toph.
Except
Toph shows up.
How much of a punishment do you think that would be?
Toph shows up. Here I am. What's up? Everyone's dead, Mom. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jeff.
My first thought when Lynn jumped off was like, what are you going to be like swinging
on?
Yeah,
Jeff, I had the same question.
Yeah.
She flew into the ocean.
Lynn can swim. I mean, why not?
In the Spider-Man video game, you could get out over the rivers by hanging onto a helicopter. I don't think that's a viable option
here. Well, there might be an airship.
There's an airship, maybe.
Maybe she did that then.
She jumped over to commandeer Kuvira's airship. That's what.
Yes. I mean, Lynn has a history of commandeering airships, so I don't see a problem with this.
Yeah.
Okay, and yeah, so I don't know. I just think this entire ending sequence is incredibly done. Yes. And even if like the middle parts of this episode are maybe underwhelming, this is just so good.
And then we have the final shot of Kavir's face, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, that.
So
yeah.
Great.
So I think, this episode is Kavir's like shining moment. I think this cements her as potentially the best villain of the series. Like, I still think it's like Amon had the bad ending, and theoretically Kavir is gonna have a good better ending than Amon here, but just this characterization of Kavir in this episode is so good. I think it beats out Zaheer, even though Zaheer had deeper motivations and meaning and stuff like that. His ending also wasn't good.
I think Zaheer was more of a character than Kuvira is, though.
I completely agree.
That's my huge problem with Kuvira right now, is like everyone's talking about the characterization, like, oh, she, how far
like,
will she go? How
it?
Far down will I she go? Like, it's a slippery slope. I'm like, from what? We have no baseline.
Right,
like,
so there's less of a baseline than Zaheer, that being said.
Well, the thing is, we just knew the only difference is we knew Zaheer's ideology. We didn't really, it's not like he had a little deep characterization of him. He just,
I agree. The big difference is the stakeout.
For Kuvira,
the big difference is the stakeout, right? Kuvira has never like stated what she believes, like Zaheer did, And that being said,
we might get a villain monologue in the finale.
We maybe, I doubt it. That being said, Kuvira and Batar is deeper than any emotional thing.
I think
thing
the idea of Kuvira is the best villain. I don't think the execution.
Well, I think if they focus on her enough good. In the last two episodes, like it could be good. Like, she's the
well,
focus
yeah, no,
on
I'm
this
saying
episode.
As of right now, I don't think she was the best.
Before this episode, I certainly didn't think she was that much of a character and even close. But I think she's just so good here that
she
it's
certainly
worth,
though is
it's
a,
worth considering.
A much better version of Ozai, at the very least.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She's also more competent than Ozai, yeah.
Well, and I think there's a chance that in Ozai the finale...
Phoenix
idiot.
King Kuvira.
Yeah. Yes, please. Okay. Any other thoughts on specific things in the episode?
Are we...
Sami's alive.
It was very pretty.
So what was up with Oliver Sava's, like, accent thing? I don't know. Understand.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was completely a joke. Yeah, just it. I don't know what it was like a joke about, but it was just obviously a joke. He hadn't seen the episode at that point. Anyway, so yeah, no, I think it's worth noting how gorgeous all the backgrounds and stuff are in this episode. Potentially the best of the season, maybe of the series. Like, I don't know. Just so Jeff was putting screenshots
all the time, though.
Yeah, but like it's even better, right? There's so many choices for
There's
the
a lot
DF
of
screenshot
nice shots
post
for
now.
Republic City, yes. And then the mountains around Republic City.
Yeah.
Thanks to the 25-story Colossus.
I will say, I think in general, this like war plotline in Republic City is maybe, it's not like a miscalculation. I think they know what they're doing, but I just don't think it works given the buildup from the entire show because we don't have an attachment to Republic City. Like, we should, but we don't. And
it's a lot better than season one.
And we also don't have an attachment to Kuvira because we haven't really focused on her, the Earth Empire plotline, that much. So really, the stakes of this this war plotline, it's just, this is something that's happening. The real interesting thing is going to be what happens with the characters we care about, not with, like, Kuvira and the plot or Republic City. Who cares about any
of
that?
Well, all 10 of them are dead, so...
So if everyone's dead, though, then it's going to be dangerous,
well, I think there's
right?
a good chance in the finale we'll get a big focus on Kuvira, because if we go... I could see us going through the episode for, like, probably half of the first episode of the finale with everyone thinks everyone's dead. And, like, we don't go back to Lynn for a while, and it's just Kuvira being like, I won, yay! And then taking over the city.
That could be interesting, not showing them until for
I think
a while.
Very effective.
We will see on that.
It.
We're going to...
Her and Raiko sipping tea.
We'll have finale predictions in a second. First, let's grade this episode, though.
God, finale predictions. I don't know what's going to happen.
Series finale. Series
prediction.
Finale predictions, yeah. 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. 5 is an average episode of television. Briefly, tell us your grade and why. Let's start with Mel.
Okay, so I'm going to give this one an 8.4.
Wow.
Because I thought a lot of great stuff happened. However, I do think plot was moving characters for the majority of it instead of the other way around. Which, and I know you tell me not to do this, but I can't help but compare it to the other episodes in last season, just because I think the last couple episodes of the last season were like the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Do you think this is better than
Same.
The ultimatum?
We
didn't love the ultimatum on the podcast. On
yeah,
it.
I know. I'm trying to think. I'll say yes, just because I liked a lot. I liked how the stakes kept getting raised. I honestly liked that a lot happened. I like that by the end, I didn't really feel like a lot happened, even though at the beginning it was like a barrage of things as soon as Kuvira was like walking around that mountain with her giant Jaeger suit. But yeah, I mean, I think that this didn't have the emotional impact that some of the last episodes of last season did, but I think that it definitely had the action impact.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very interesting plot line. I do like Kuvira. I don't, you know, as of right now, I don't think she's the best villain, but I do think she's really awesome. And I really liked how this ended with them getting their butts blasted by that thing.
Yeah. Nice. Jeff.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I will give it a solid 9.0.
Wow.
I liked it.
You liked it, yeah.
Because
of reasons. Because of reasons previously stated.
Yes, I have nothing new to say. It was all good.
Yeah. All right.
Well, most of it was good.
Most of it was good. Allie.
I feel like I'm going to rate it too low now, but I kind of want to give it just a solid 7. Because, I mean, I did really like it, but it was not, other than the ending, it was not very surprising. I don't know. Not that, like, surprises are, like, what makes a show good, but, like, at where we are now, the finale is next week, the series finale is next week, and I'm still, like, I don't know.
I think it also should be noted that a lot of the reason it's not surprising is from things like episode description and titles and stuff that like
too,
that.
I guess. Yeah. But I mean, even with like Julie and like what Kuvira was going to do, it didn't surprise me. But I mean, it was really good. So cool. Also, yeah. Some lines were dumb, so that's also deducts points.
Deducts points.
Stories. Also, that fart line that Janet had to say. I can't believe she had to say that.
That was great.
That plus the 25 story one was just made me upset. But yeah.
All right. Nice. Britt.
I give it a...
It's a musical now.
Shut up.
I give it a...
I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
Good, solid 8.
Good.
No one wants to elaborate on
Delaney, what would you give it?
I think I'd give it
an... expansion. It just gets an 8.
I give it an 8.7. This was a really solid episode. I enjoyed it. And I love Kuvira. I think she's a great... I just enjoyed her characterization in this episode, and I just thought this was... This is an episode that I can see myself rewatching, which to me is like factors into my rating, and I just really enjoyed it. It was a solid, good episode.
Nice. Yeah. 8.5. I have very little interest in what happens. That
runs people.
Very little interest in the middle of the episode, but again, the beginning and end, or especially the ending scene, is just so good. The end scene is like 9.9 out of 10 territory, but the rest of the episode brings it down. So it's not that it's bad, though. I think it's fine. It's in the very good tier. It's with the rest of book 4. And I'm satisfied with how this went, I think.
Okay, so how good is the finale going to have to be to... get book 4 above book 3?
It would have to be 2 10 out of tens. Like,
it's gonna be like insane.
Yeah.
It doesn't
have to be 2 10 out of tens. On my ranking system, it has to be 2 best ever episodes, because book 4 has only had 1 best ever episode, whereas book 3 had 3. So it'd have to be 2 best ever, which is incredibly hard to do. So I don't expect it to. So we're probably looking at the 2nd best season of Korra here.
But what's gonna happen?
Nothing.
Everything.
Well, Ellie.
It needs to be nuts.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's going to be...
It's probably going to be nuts. I mean, they're fighting a giant robot.
Yeah, so, okay, so we'll get into that in a second. Let's read...
Several of them are dead,
if she destroys Korra's statue that Asami made for her...
No, literally, that's the whole plan. She's marching into Avatar Korra Park and is literally just going to kick it over, and then she's going to leave.
Let's read feedback. Let's start with Sam's feedback. Sam says, anyway, I was wrong, and Batar is probably dead. Someone has to be sorry for yelling last week. Kuvira is ruthless and needs to go down. It's slipping more and more into my mind that both Korra and Kuvira are going to die. It's the end. Someone has to write. This is an Avatar. We're not going to take Kuvira's bending away and lock her in jail, though that would be funny if that's what happened again. IDK, we'll figure it out. Bolin's cool. The end. That's what Sam says. Okay.
A plus thoughts.
Yeah, no, Sam and I kind of agree. This episode's one it's such a plot-heavy, just kind of action-y episode. It's hard to like have a grade for it. It just kind of happened, you know? That's what Sam and I were talking about.
It just kind of happened.
We have two voicemails to play, the first of which is from Danny, so let me get that queued up.
The episode was very predictable. I mean, it was exciting while I was watching it, but it didn't have any huge lasting impression on me. I mean, it is interesting that the building kind of blew up and we don't really know who survived, but most likely everyone will, so that's... I wish half the people there died, just for the impression of it. I mean, I really want a dramatic, genuinely dramatic ending. Okay. I hope I didn't sound too morbid. See you guys.
Yes, that was fairly morbid.
I mean, considering Ali wants everyone dead.
So I agree. I want people dead. Like, does anyone
need to die?
There needs to be consequences.
Yeah, I think so.
Like,
no, they all have plot armor.
Like, I do think actually.
I mean, does Bolin have plot armor anymore? No. Does Mako have plot armor? No.
Korra doesn't
until the last until the last scene.
What do you mean, unfortunately?
I'll talk about
we'll talk about this. Yeah, yes. Okay. I think I'll let everyone's like, oh, no one's gonna die. I actually think people could die. So
I think there's very high likelihood that at least one person died.
Wing is dead. No,
I mean, if not dead,
not even the one we cared about. Not even the one of the
not two. Even the one who's
not like, even not the gay one. Like, come on, let's at least get some
how about
stakes.
Mako just loses his legs instead of dies. Then he just
can't wow. Walk.
I don't know. I feel like there'd be injuries instead of deaths if that's gonna happen.
I mean, like, if there are no
at the
injuries.
End of How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah,
exactly. Except okay. He loses both of his
spoilers.
Legs.
Okay, now we have a voicemail from Tato.
But I knew you were trouble when you walked in, so shame on him now. This is Tato. Kavira done goofed. She really done goofed. Also, they destroyed the hummingbird machines, Max. I really wanted to see them. Hopefully, Asami has, like, a spare one that they use, you know, to fly up to get to the Colossus and attack it and open it. Julie and Barak, I think they're going to be the next Katang in the way that they'll share their passionate kiss in the finale. This episode
I hope so.
Was just...
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Tato.
Yes.
So there's two points here. One is the... Yeah, I agree. We talked about this before. Julie and Barak, I think, are the most likely to have, like, an overly romantic thing
but
in
like,
the finale.
But, like, Katang?
In the last shot. It's just Barak and Julie.
Yes.
Yeah. The other
totally
thing is the...
That.
The,
can Barak be the one in the green dress, please?
Is the flying
yes.
The flying mechs. Yeah, Barak's in the green dress. This is something we haven't really discussed that much. So theoretically, they're blown up in the factory beam, but we don't know if Asami got any
well,
out or
think,
not.
I don't think they all... like that was a very aside from the building collapsing, it's a very focused beam.
Yeah,
energy.
Well,
I think
they definitely didn't hit all of them. I think it's probably...
I mean,
the building will probably...
have a lot of range with that
before
thing.
This podcast
yeah.
started, I saw people on Tumblr like, Asami totally got one out before, she totally saw them or whatever, blah, blah, blah. She got in a suit out, and they're all out, and they're fine, and whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
maybe.
I think either she got it out, or they are just not
or
all
they can
of
pick
died,
through the
know?
Rubble.
Or she just
get
has
a
an extra, like, oh, let me go back to my house, guys. I totally
I
have
it there. Yeah.
She would,
yeah.
though, 100% have an extra in her house.
She would.
She would.
Like, her, like, Asami thinks ahead about these things.
She'd have
see,
her
that's what, exactly, Asami's
she
smart.
Would have the one she planned on riding into battle with. Like, she has her own personal
it's gonna be red.
Yeah, it's going to be a red one.
It's
okay.
Be Sato red.
We have messages from you guys. Let's start show night. Wow, what an episode. The idea of a giant metal suit isn't exactly the most original thing I've seen in animated cartoons. If Sam's on, she'll probably talk about how it was on Danny Phantom. And also, if I recall, it was one of the later eps of season one of Gravity Falls. But I don't... think this concept
wasn't
has
a giant gnome though or a giant pile of gnomes
but I don't think this concept has ever invoked such a reaction out of me. I don't know about you, but the combo of Kavira, deadly weapon, and wonderful execution was such a thrill to watch. Gravity Falls season one finale had a very similar like giant things fighting. Yeah, I don't know, it was the Kavira and the deadly weapon. That's the next Harry
yes.
Potter book.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, huh. There you go. Toon Gal says, Show Knight's great, by the way. Toon Gal says, did Batar Jr. just die? It was really unclear.
Jesus.
Yes. Answer yes. He's number one in the power rankings, so.
It should be Mako in the window.
I think Mako's too. He's also high up. There's a clear separation between one and two and the rest, I think.
I don't know if I want him to die or not.
It's
like,
not clear, yeah.
We'll get to that.
Okay. Greg is an email. Let's read some of Greg Seraphim's.
Hi, Greg.
Yeah, hi, Greg.
You follow me on Twitter.
Yes. Greg follows everyone on
Twitter. Ryko's War Council. Once again, Ryko is consulting with a bunch of young 20-somethings and a pacifist on the eve of the imminent attack from a formidable military threat. I'm not saying Team Avatar plus Wu should not be present at the meeting. They have all proven to be valuable advisors on matters throughout the years to Ryko's government, despite his conflicts with them. But wow, maybe have some actual military advisors be present. That room should be filled with important people. I personally think the lack of supporting characters is a result of the slashed animation budget and keep down effort to keep down low cost. No, this is Dylan talking now. I think this is a plot decision, right?
The only military advisor we know of is Iroh, and he has to.
Yeah,
sail
so
there,
they want it. They want people that matter in the room with White Ryko, even if it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
So I think they probably should. Like Kuvira has random military advisors. Ryko could too, but they decided not to do that.
Ryko just doesn't like anybody.
Riko has one friend, maybe.
Yes.
And it's his wife.
And it's not. And it's not even his wife.
It's his wife.
It's not even his wife.
More from Greg. I don't understand the giant colossus. I'm going to brush past the ridiculously rapid construction and lack of prototyping that occurred and chalk that up to Batar Jr.'s seemingly previously under-demonstrated mechanical and engineering genius and the fact that we didn't know about it because he was in fact living in his father's shadow. So now if we move past all of that and just talk about the machine, there are several issues. We see Kuvira controlling the machine through metal bending, and while she appears to be one of the most able metal benders around, it is questionable whether even Toph could control a piece of metal that big, and most importantly, that complex all by herself. While it is possible the levers send a message down to the other metal benders, the type of coordination necessary for a single person to pilot something that large, never mind groups of people, is extraordinary. It would take months, if not years, to get something like that down and functioning in the manner that we see. If you speak to any engineer, just because you're able to control a smaller model of something, say a mecha tank in this instance, it's not translated to being able to control a larger scale version of it. Never mind the Colossus looks to have something control it, to have different controlling mechanisms.
What?
So I think that it's interesting. Are the metal benders controlling it, or are the levers, or are the mechanical parts of it controlling it? Right.
Probably. I mean,
the only thing we know is that she's controlling the gun.
Yeah.
It could be that, like, she's sending
and how
like,
it moves
the coordinating messages to all the different parties that are controlling, like the legs and the arms and whatever.
Yeah. I got the impression that there is no delay.
It moves as she.
Unless it moves at the speed of neurons in the brain, it's
yeah.
Which is not likely.
Which is not
maybe
likely.
She's just it's controlling the top with her metal bending, and then the feet are being controlled by people.
I got the impression that she's controlling a machine, that she's not actually moving it with her metal. She's moving the levers.
No, but she did move it when she was, like, aiming at the bison and stuff.
Also, yeah, what's that stuff around her? Are they screens, or what is that? The strange ball things.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, to read her, like, body movements, but
I thought it was something not really
mechanical.
But the
ball things, those are, like, how she controls, like, the arms movements and all that.
Yeah, like, she's bending those to, and sending, like, and it's connected to the arms. Like, she's
I think
not
her
physically
bending
bending
the metal
arms.
Makes more sense than her doing it from a mechanical standpoint. I don't think she's strong enough to do that, but that seems to be what's happening, because there's no way that she could send messages or relay anything fast enough to have it move as quick as it's moving if it's other people doing the movement.
Well, I don't necessarily think it's other people. It's, like, the levers. Like, she has, like, the stuff around her she's moving, like, she's bending, but they're connected to the, like, she's actually moving everything herself, but it's through, like, mechanics, if that makes sense.
The amount of hardwire for that, though. I mean, those arms are, like, football fields long.
Yep.
That's why I'm saying it. I'm going all by that
like,
she's metal bending
just,
it.
There's just so many problems with it.
Yeah.
You okay?
That's what I meant. She's not. Never mind. I give up.
I didn't die. It's all good.
Okay, so I've asked Nick on Twitter whether we're getting upset. We'll see if they respond. Because someone else asked, okay. Kind of.
How many smiley faces did you use?
None, because I ran out of space. More thoughts from...
I thought you were going to say you ran out of smileys. I was like, wait a minute.
I can't... Like, I have my quota of smileys. Okay, Woo... Greg's thoughts on hashtag Woo watching. Hurry, Woo is showing some redeeming qualities that have the trappings of a good leader. Well, he better cut that crap out. It is too little too late. All of Book 3 would seem cheap and pointless if they reinstate a king back on the Earth Kingdom throne. There's no time left in the season for him to have a redeeming arc where he proves worthy of such politically backward move. All of Season 3 was spent examining the positive and negative attributes of alternate government structure, and at the very least it brought us greater affinity or even support for some of the general universal suffrage of the Earth Kingdom. At this point, the only reasonable course is for Wu to be an instrumental in transitioning the Earth Kingdom to some kind of constitutional monarchy, or what it would be in line with the loose political structure of the kingdom prior to the Earth Empire would be an elective monarchy, whether or not he is installed as its leader, hashtag Wu watching. So,
I mean, he could be,
what if Wu decides himself? Like,
we
no,
say constitutional
I don't
monarchy,
be...
he could be like England and just be there, and then you have...
Eh.
The parliament. The parliament.
Eh.
Well, I think what I would more. What I would.
I'm
be
saying what could happen. Not saying what I want to happen.
Well, I could see like what could be like the I guess like the end of Wu's arc is that he's like yeah, I mean, I might, like, he's just kind of like, no, there shouldn't be a king. Like, there should be something else. I don't want to be the king.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay. So.
I'd be better.
The solution is, I think the season is obviously setting Wu up to run the Earth Kingdom after Kuvira in the epilogue. So I think Greg brings up really good points that this would kind of invalidate a lot of Book 3 if he's just the new king. I think the solution is the epilogue is election day in Ba Sing Se, and the people choose to have Wu as their leader after
liking him.
Yeah. So I think that's where it's going. That being said, as someone else pointed out, what they're doing with the Earth Kingdom right now, someone else pointed out on my Tumblr, is very similar to, is just very just parallel to Chinese history in the early 1900s, and then China did not go to a democracy after that, so maybe they're not going, that's not where they're going with the Earth Kingdom. So we'll see. Greg says, spirits, what spirits? It is likely that the reintroduction of the spirit story arc in this whole mess is going to be very rushed. It seems possible or even likely that in order to speed that arc along in the time that we have left, we are going to get hashtag Chatty Rava once again. I'm just waiting for the blazing white she-beast of a kite cut to come in and explicitly explain what the real conflict is between spirits and technology.
Yes.
She sits Kuvira down.
Oh God.
Like Kuvira.
I swear, if Rava resolves the spirits plotline, that is going to be so annoying. Like, no.
Well, if Rava appears at all, it'll be really.
It's going to be really annoying. True. Meanwhile, if Vatu appears, it is going to be incredible. So
Vatu's like, back off.
He's currently cultivating inside Korra, and will be with you in the 10,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's doing. And lastly for Greg, at this point, I don't really care.
The spirit energy, and then like that supercharges Vatu, and he like pops out of her. When Brit has
something to say,
and then he takes down the giant robot.
No Rava in the plot. Like, please no. Please not for that either. I think it,
like,
please no. Relevant. I think it might happen.
Oh,
so
serious right now.
And last, at this point, I don't care what happens with Kuvira. She could turn around and go back to her empire, and I wouldn't care. But what I really want from the finale is resolution with Korra's mental state. That is pretty much all I'm interested in and happening for the rest of the time we have. Resolution of that issue is the only thing that will even make me feel remotely satisfied with the season, and maybe happy ending for hashtag Wuko. There you go. I added in some hashtags, but okay. So that's a good transition. Thank you, Greg. That's a good transition into our finale predictions. Okay, let's start it off with this. The number one thing most likely to happen in the finale is that Korra faces off with Kuvira and sees Miss Dark Avatar Korra, her hallucination, as Kuvira instead of herself. Yes or no?
Yes.
I would love to.
It shouldn't,
I really don't
know
if it's gonna happen.
Yes.
Why shouldn't it?
Because it's way too on the nose. I mean, they made a point to point out that Kuvira and Korra are similar people, and that how she'd handle the situation with Kuvira with past Korra and all that other stuff. I think that's enough to justify a fight against Kuvira and a way that she hopefully handles it a little less aggressively. I think if we slap Korra's face on there and have her fight herself, it's just really, it's very on the nose. I think that having it happen one time, Kuvira turned into Korra, Miss Dark Avatar Korra, and Korra backed off, I think that was enough.
I'd rather
see her face off, deal with this Miss Dark Avatar Korra situation separately.
Okay, I'm gonna counterpoint. So I think that one, Kuvira is not really that important to the plot, so like she's obviously important to the plot of the season, but we don't have any sort of attachment to her as a whole. We can resolve this in the previous episode, and you can also resolve her afterwards. What's more important is this mental state plotline, which is the real, kind of the quote-unquote real plot of the season. Mm-hmm. And me putting it on the highest level like this in her face-off in the final fight of the series would be great. It would show its importance. It would put Korra's, and most importantly, it would put Korra's character arc as the climax of the show, right? So I think this is the Legend of Korra is Korra's character arc. It is the most interesting and important and well done thing of the entire show, and bringing it to head with a fight, even if it's incredibly on the nose, which is what the show is already, bringing it to the highest point in this fight would be a pretty great decision, and they could definitely execute on it in an interesting way.
Here's my issue with that. Is that I don't think this is something that should be fought physically for a multitude of reasons. However, the biggest one is she's already tried to fight this thing physically before, and we saw it didn't work because it's not supposed to work. Because because it is a mental situation. It is an emotional situation, and I want to see her resolve that in a way that doesn't involve her beating the crap out of Kuvira to do it. I think that sends a really bad message, and I think it also ruins the arc entirely. I mean, why would we watch Korra grow this much to just watch her literally beat up her own problems?
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good point.
Do you have an idea of like what you would rather see then? Like, I'm just having issues visualizing.
I'd rather see it happen. Here's the thing, is I liked a lot of what happened with Zaheer, and I'd love it for that to be the end of it, because I think that was awesome, the way she went, even though I was the biggest opponent to her going to see Zaheer. But after it happened, I love that he was like, the biggest problem here is like, let it play out, watch it happen, admit that it happened, and find a way to deal with it that way and move on. Don't go around visualizing all your issues onto this person and then beating them up. That's not the way you solve this.
What do you think of the argument that Zaheer was a good, bringing Zaheer back was a good conclusion to her seeing the Zaheer's hallucinations, but not necessarily the hallucination of herself?
It depends on how you view the hallucinations and how they're going to, because I'm sure it's going to come back, but how they're ultimately going to present the hallucinations, because the Zaheer flashbacks, like, yeah, that was a great conclusion to that. I do think that was a slightly separate issue. However, they did happen to coincide with each other, particularly in the fight with Kuvira. She saw the flashbacks to Zaheer, and then Miss Dark Avatar Korra showed up. I think it honestly goes back to her deal with her losing her physicality in being put into a wheelchair, and as we learned, apparently being paralyzed for quite some time, is what Miss Dark Avatar Korra represents, is that it's her own perceived weakness, it's her own instability of a self-image, because it was based so much on what she could do and not what she chooses to do. So that's why here I'd rather see a more, in the term realms of Korra, unconventional way to end this, mm-hmm. that doesn't involve her plastering all her problems onto Kuvira and then taking care of it that way.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
Well, I don't necessarily like want this, but there's also to consider, obviously the descriptions are really vague and we hate them, but talking about how obviously the life of the Avatar is always at stake, but isn't perhaps like, and we've discussed this before about this struggle with Miss Dark Avatar Korra could be, it might actually have a real impact on the Avatar state and like the actual spirituality of the Avatar, and I wonder how that might play out.
Okay, yeah, so this is a good point. So let's consider the hallucination of Miss Dark Avatar Korra as a representation of Korra's struggles with her role as the Avatar.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
So you want me to respond to it that way?
Would it be more satisfying in that regard? It's both her struggles with her role as the Avatar, and that's inseparable from her mental state struggles, too.
It depends on what her struggle as the role as the Avatar for is... That didn't come out of a sentence. It depends on how you view that, because I think we're both saying the same thing. I think that Korra's role as the Avatar is what gave her this sort of frail image of herself, because she saw herself as nothing more than the Avatar, as the big bad Avatar. Zaheer took that away from her, and look what happened. There was nothing left. And I think that was her huge deal in Korra alone and wandering around looking for Rava, because she's like, I'm nothing without Rava. I'm nothing if I'm not the Avatar.
How about the final fight as Korra... this is a true symbolic representation of Korra defeating the image of that she's just the Avatar and finding her own identity.
Or even the chance that it's she, that this actually just might be a physical representation, and that like she actually, it's not necessarily that I want this, but I think there's the chance that, I mean, this show, I mean, it's on
it's
the
It's going to happen. Like, that's the thing, is what you guys are saying, that's 100% what's going to happen. My thing here is that I don't like it, because I'd rather it be resolved in a different way. I'd rather it be separate from Kuvira, honestly. I really liked what happened with Zaheer and the way that she had to watch that fight play out in order to get beyond that. And I think a similar thing should happen with this. Like, she needs to reevaluate all these things. And I don't think her method of, at this point, of reevaluating this, of examining her role of the Avatar, should be to fight something, because mm-hmm, that's the mm-hmm. problem.
Yeah. Okay. So I really how I present it to you as a question, as her struggle with her hallucination of her in the Avatar state as both overcoming of her PTSD and both not an overcoming, but you know, like dealing with it in somehow, and also combined with her struggles as her role as the Avatar, which I really think it could be like, I got past the events that physically hurt me at the end of book three, but there's still all these things. Like, she's really struggled with maintaining her sense of self in the wake of how she's just been thrust into this role of leadership through so many times throughout the show. And also, she's really redefined it from her predecessors. So she's kind of like opening the Avatar, like opening the portals and learning about the past with the Avatar, with Wan. Like, it's such a way that she maybe feels uncomfortable and different than previous, and she might want to either redefine it or get rid of it. And it's really appealing to me on that level. I agree with you that her fighting it like isn't a great way to do it, but I think there's, so I think one of the conclusions we can come to is there's a way to do it where she can face off with her hallucination and Kuvira, but it, the final fight actually.
I think there will be two fights. Like, I think there will be Kuvira, okay, so, and that fight will be over really quickly, and then the actual.
I don't think any fight between Korra and Kuvira will be over quickly.
It's going to be the entire last episode.
I meant, like, that won't be the focus. Like, I can't be satisfied with just some battle.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So she's going to face off with.
They're going to pull out a Deus Machina, like the Tree of Life, the Giant Life.
So, okay, so.
Like, it's going to happen.
It doesn't. So basically, she's facing off with Mistarka Avatar Korra, and it can be done in an abstract, non necessarily super physical way, I think. That's not going to be Korra necessarily physically fighting it, right? So you think of something like. Something like let's say the book two finale of Korra combined with the book three finale of Avatar, right? Like some one-on-one fight that's like in this spiritually abstract way, and they're kind of going through the spirit world or something like that. It doesn't have to be the spirit world, but it's just, it's not necessarily
she goes into
this
the spirit world that dismantles.
It would be a lot easier if this Miss Dark Avatar Korra hallucination would speak.
Yeah,
I think that's what the problem is here, is that a lot of why we need to see this, and unfortunately the plot's driving it towards a need for a physical altercation to get rid of it, is because it doesn't do anything but attack her. It would be nice if it said a few things once in a while, because it would give us another way to deal with this.
So I think there's a way to approach it where Korra like yells at it and talks to it the entire time, and it's like her like airing her soul out or whatever, you know, like just saying things. Like, I think that's a way to approach it. And it's probably not.
And I'd love to see that. I'd love to see a situation where she's yelling at it, where she's ranting at it, screaming at it, and it keeps trying to hit her. Maybe she lets it hit her. Maybe she evades it.
Yeah, and maybe it just doesn't, it morphs from this strict hallucination that we've seen in the past, which has followed fairly linear rules where it just stands there and it can attack. It doesn't say anything, and it like morphs into just an actual version of her that's still in the Avatar state, but it's just talks and can do things, and maybe it's like an actual, like even more so on the nose Korra fighting herself. But yeah, I think my general point is, I agree that the physical aspect of it is not necessarily the best route to go down, although Korra fighting it still kind of has a sense of maintaining her identity, even if we change stuff up here.
Unless she doesn't fight back.
She could not fight back, but I also think, like I said, I think there's an abstract way to go about this, and they are really good at presenting these high-concept, crazy things in the finales, so, like, maybe they can put that to good use here in a time when it would actually be good, and have her face off against it in this crazy, spiritual, abstract way, and I think that actually could be where we're going with this. And I think that would be satisfying. I think in general, even if she fights it, like, I agree with you, that's a problem, but I think the bigger concept is so appealing to me in terms of ending the series, like I said, to start this discussion, as just ending on Korra's character arc, finishing the mental struggle, finishing her conflict as the Avatar, like, even though we haven't really had that play out the season too much, they definitely weren't as overt to a certain extent this season as I thought they'd be with Korra's arc. It's just more, they're fairly overt with her recovery and Korra alone, and since then, Korra's just been doing things. She's had it resurface once or twice, and we haven't seen her struggle as the Avatar. We haven't seen her struggle mentally too much beyond that. But they could bring it up in spite of that, or like her redefining of the role of the Avatar. And I think that'd be a really good way to do it. Shifting gears slightly, I think another thing we should consider is the possibility that the Avatar as a concept comes to an end in the finale. This is something that I talked about extensively pre-book four, and it's not something that's came up really. Like I said, they haven't really done this plotline overtly throughout the season, but it's still something that seems like it could happen. It's hinted at the episode description, the stake at the Avatar. It doesn't say Korra's life is on the line. It says the Avatar, right?
Yes.
So to me, it makes sense, not necessarily just on a strictly this season level, but on an entire series level, that Korra decides the world does not need her as the Avatar anymore, or in its any sort of recognizable form. She saw Wan, she saw how the way the Avatar started was kind of a sham, right? Like, it was not good. It was Wan being hot-headed and intervening when he shouldn't have. And
I mean, she's the counter to Wan. That's what her storyline has been.
She's kind of, yeah, kind of the counter to Wan. And she makes a decision that's completely separate from the rest of the Avatars and opening the portals. And she sees how many people just don't want the Avatar, and how not necessarily she's like, her as the Avatar hasn't maybe solved anything. It's her,
she got
right?
rid of being the bridge. Like, she's had two jobs. Yeah. They're like physical. I mean, the representation of
and
people.
Yeah, and I think last and episode we saw that the spirits are like, we don't want anything to do with you. So it's like, what is her being the Avatar even doing, right? It's just Korra being
she
awesome.
She can bend all four elements.
Yeah,
that's it.
that's really it, right?
It's her herself that's solving these problems. Do my previous prediction that she'll just cast Rava off at her and be like, we don't need you anymore.
I don't know if she'll do that, because that didn't really work out too well for her last time Rava was removed from her body.
She could do, like, I could sit, like,
not
maybe
forcibly.
She wins.
Like, if she does it forcibly, obviously it's not going to work. But if she does it out of choice, it might be different.
Going off of what Zaheer said, what if, like, she wins and, like, she, like, mass destruction, like, she obliterates Kavira and she realizes no one should have this power. No one should have this limitless power.
Yeah,
and that's how the Avatar ceases to exist.
Yeah, and that was kind of hinted at with Zaheer saying your power is limitless a few episodes ago. So I think the other thing we should consider with Korra's arc is the possibility that Korra herself dies in the finale. And I'm going to present this as a theory, and then we can discuss the general concept from there. So basically, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is Korra is going to face off Kavira, and then it's going to turn into herself, and so somehow she overcomes and she gets rid of this hallucination, but she's still fighting Kavira, and then she's not doing well after she's been focusing so much on the hallucination. She hasn't necessarily doing well in the fight. She realizes that in order to stop Kavira, she has to take her down with her. She blows them both up or whatever, but then. So it's kind of this heroic, self-sacrificing ending, which has kind of been talked about with Korra before. But then, to me, something else that you can build on this is Korra then pulls an Iroh and, like, kind of transcends to the spirit world. So
I don't know about the
dying
part.
In the Avatar.
So
state,
the reason
is a good way to get rid of the Avatar.
Well, this is regardless of the concept of the Avatar. This is me talking about Korra dying. So the reason I think her becoming a spirit. Is
and the Avatar
appealing.
Spirit becomes just a literal spirit.
It's yeah, like maybe something like that too. And then the past lives come back and she's with the past lives in the spirit world is like the epilogue.
Star Wars ending.
But basically,
Star Wars.
Ooh, there's a press release about the most reblogs.
Yeah, that was like
thing.
From yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, but there's like an actual press release about it, and Korra's in the. Is in the
it's
thing.
Number
yeah.
one.
It's yeah, it's number one for anime shows. Yeah, but there's like a natural press release on TV by the numbers. That's cool. And Korra's number one. Okay, but the reason this is appealing, her going to the spirit world, is on two levels. One, it wouldn't be such a blatantly sad ending. Korra's still there. It's kind of a bittersweet ending. Two is that Mike and Brian have talked about how Korra's big plot line is her, the opposite of Aang. Aang is the super spiritual person. And Korra starts out not at all spiritual and has developed spirituality throughout the entire show. So the ultimate sign of becoming is developing spirituality is literally becoming a spirit at the end of the season, at the end of the show. So it would kind of resolve the spirit's side of the plotline, which is not clear how they're going to handle that.
Maybe she'll become the spirit of the world.
The spirit of the world, yeah. Some
she becomes
some,
the sun.
Some nonsense
that
like that, yeah. So I think there's two separate.
No, Sami becomes the sun.
So I don't know, Mel. I guess you can respond to that there and talk about it in general
yeah.
why you think.
I mean,
Korra could die.
I don't. I mean, I have no opinion on the spirit thing. I do think it's really cool that it's the first time I'm hearing about that. Although I guess it's a counter to that. Another way to look at Korra dying is that, yeah, it's obviously a self-sacrificial situation, and then it sort of ends where Avatar began, where Korra is dead, and it's the situation where it's like, okay, waiting for the Avatar to return, because I don't think this season has presented the Avatar negatively.
Yeah.
I think, in fact, it's proved why you need one, because in the absence of the Avatar, Kuvira did this, and that's what happened in the last show, is that in 100 years absence of the Avatar, Ozai did that. I think it proves that you do kind of need this figure who
who can create balance. Like, there's so many
The important thing here is that you've got this human person who, yes, is endowed with power, and it's not that, though. It's the fact that, and this comes from one of those online games that I guess no one takes as canon, but the point that they were saying that the Avatar needs to exist and the Avatar needs to be human because the spirits don't care about people. And that's the point. And that's what we've seen in the show. The spirits are like, oh, it's your own problem. Truck off. And like disappeared into the world, into the spirit world, refused to help. You know, you need this. You need someone like this in the world. So I don't think I totally jive with the idea of her being a spirit. I do think it would make great sense for her arc, but I don't think it's what the show is presenting to us.
What about just Korra dying, though?
Korra just dying, and it's like I said, so Korra dies, she dies a self-sacrificial way, and there's a lot to be said about why and when and how you should kill your characters, especially main characters, and there's a lot of literature on that, and that's a huge debate, but I think it would just give us a very poetic ending because it would end exactly where it began, and it's not the point that, well, it's the legend of Korra, you know, yes, she did this great thing and that was it, but the point is the bigger concept of the Avatar and that there are these people who, as far as we know, every one of them has come into the world and done their job and protected the world.
Remember how Avatar Wan died, too, if she's his antithesis. Yeah. He died at the end of the story having failed. Yeah. Maybe she dies at the end having succeeded.
Yes. Yeah.
And like the whole idea, or maybe it's the point of the Avatar.
What I'd like to see is her winning her fight against Miss Dark Avatar Korra, but losing to Kavira.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, so I think Kavira probably has to be defeated to have some sort of satisfying epilogue. If we're going to go that route,
she'll be defeated, but she won't. Korra won't walk out of that fight.
Yeah, so I think,
Avatar, Korra, if we don't get rid of the whole idea of the Avatar, Korra has to die for, like, to elevate the idea that the Avatar is still important.
So I think a lot of people aren't taking seriously the concept of...
I know that everyone hates to say this, but maybe she dies and she doesn't win her fight against Kuvira, you know? And Kuvira takes over the Earth Kingdom, and then you have the crying, you know, the Avatar, the next Avatar being born, and that's the job.
And that's like the hook for just like, oh, and it continues, yeah.
And it continues, and that's our gift from Bragg.
What aren't people taking seriously, Dylan?
Let me get back to that in a second. Britt brings up a good point, actually, that it's this whole idea of ending, I forget who said this when we were discussing this on Skype, but the idea of ending the series in a way that parallels the beginning of Avatar.
Yeah.
Is that you? Yeah. So, Mel, brilliant as usual. So, yeah, so Kavira wins, and she's the new Ozai, and then the next Avatar is born, and it's just the beginning of Avatar again, right? Yeah. So that's a nice cyclical way to end the series. I don't know if it's satisfying for Korra as a show.
Well, not to mention, that's what happens in our world, too, is that there's wars upon wars upon wars, and there's that saying about how every generation has been born during a time of war, specifically the United States, but obviously there's wars going on everywhere. But I think that's a very realistic way, is that you can't win every battle, and that, you know, it just begins all over again, and there'll be other things that will rise and fall to go at it.
And of course, this entire universe is based around the idea of reincarnation and cycles, so it would be very...
I mean, before Oza, it was, what's his face? Chin. And before that, who knows what else? Like, this always happens, and there's always an Avatar.
Yeah, so it's appealing on that regard, yeah. I don't know about, I don't know about Korra's character, though, you know? Maybe her... I don't know how her dying would relate to it. Because I think that's the biggest...
It depends, I think, on the way she died.
I think is her character arc. I think that's the biggest thing to consider in any sort of ending in the show, because it really is her. So I think people aren't taking seriously the concept of the fact that Korra could die. And I think they're like, oh, haha, why would that? That's just silly. Why would that happen?
I mean, we did kill Aang. Yes, he came back, but the fact of the matter is he was dead.
Well, no, the general point is, so this isn't Avatar, right? So Korra is not Avatar. Korra does not have to end in a way that is clear her hero's journey, even though you can't apply the hero's journey to Korra as Mel has done. It's not a clear, linear plot like Avatar is. Korra has had just many separate plot lines, and
it's the Buffy half season arc.
Yeah, yes. Like it's I mean, I don't know what that means, but it sounds
well
right.
It's the big bad situation,
so it doesn't need to end in a way in which Korra triumphs. Like nothing set up for that. Also, the tone of the show is just so different. Why does it's not like, oh, this is so happy-go-lucky, like there's a lot of bad stuff that happens. And that being said,
had numerous characters die.
So characters die, like yeah, the Korra could clearly die from a conceptual level. I think that's clear if you think about it at all. That being said, I'm not sure we've gotten enough setup this season for that. Like, the season's been pretty happy with Korra on a positive trek, and it's like, how are we going to kill her in a way in which it's like a satisfying conclusion to her on the way up journey in book four, you know? Mm-hmm. Do you?
No, I agree. Like, and that's where, you know, we had this talk and I was like, well, they should kill Korra. There's a big chance they won't though.
So yeah, do you think it would be, given, like, you can't go back and change book four, given what book four has done until now, do you think it would be good to kill her at this point?
It would be good for the sake of the ending, not necessarily for the sake of the book, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I think that's in play though, right? I think they're with the. They're probably going to look at this more as a. Well, it's not clear. This is like a big question. Will they look at this more as a series finale or a season finale?
And there's and there hasn't been any evidence leading up at this point at all. Like we've barely touched upon the role of the Avatar. Like we're just going into what you would think is a normal season finale, and we haven't had any indication that they're really considering it as a series finale. Which is kind of
some. I mean, this is way bigger than what they've done before, like in terms of scale, scope, and
it's 25 stories.
It's 25. It's pretty big. It's
25. Yeah.
So I think it's worth.
I don't feel that way. Like watching this, I'm like, this doesn't seem to me like it's better than like the other finales. But to me, this doesn't seem. To me, it's not like this is a series finale.
In their story, this is the biggest threat they've had to deal with so far.
Yeah. I think I would have written book four in a way in which Korra would be dead at the end if I were writing the season. Like, I think that's, like, one of the most satisfying... Like, it's not emotionally satisfying, but...
Imagine if me, Dylan, and Mel all wrote Avatar. Imagine how much different it would be. How much darker. Everyone
there'd be
die.
A lot of death, extra death. Death.
I mean, I'm trying to go back and consider all these, movie trilogies I'm looking at where the hero dies at the end. And, I mean, the big one that comes to mind is The Matrix, where that death... Neo dying at the end didn't really make any sense or serve any purpose other than that he gave up his life to protect the people he cared about.
Yeah, so it could happen.
And that was
that
the big
level.
Thing there.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you've got the situation where Frodo doesn't necessarily die at the end of The Lord of the Rings, but he basically does because he goes to the Tolkien universe's equivalent of heaven, which is that land beyond the sea. So, and for him, the point of him doing that and dying is that, you know, he couldn't win. He couldn't get away from everything that had happened to him and he couldn't escape it. And life just wasn't the same for him. So he had to leave.
So how about Korra dying as her moving beyond, you know, like going to, and then she goes to the spirit world and that's like the beyond and stuff like that. I think also Korra going to the spirit world would be appealing on the level of, we have this spirits, the previous episode presented us with the spirits and humans not intermingling thing, and Korra could like serve as the human's ambassador in the spirit world and really help change how she's a spirit, stuff like that. I don't know if that's what they're thinking of foremost. Probably
I think
not.
That would honestly be a really great ending. And I think over the course of the show, they've set that up pretty well with the constant meetings with Iroh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like the fact that Brian... That the only thing that makes me think this could happen is that Brian in the commentaries had such a clear explanation for why Iroh was there. Like, they thought about it a lot, so maybe they thought about it that way and that's what's going to happen to someone else, you know? That's the only thing.
And it would complete Korra's arc.
I guess let's call this the Dylan theory, so I can have some stakes going into the finale. This is Dylan's prediction. I don't know if... I think this is unlikely to happen. I think it's maybe Korra becoming a spirit. This seems... somewhat random, maybe like a 15% chance. Like, seems kind of low. Korra dying, though, at all. That's more interesting to look at. I think it's probably, we're like talking like 30%.
Yeah.
I think it's not likely.
I actually think that, you know, we discussed the three endings, you know, at length. Yeah. And I think, right now, for me, I think the bittersweet ending is like, not as high as I thought it was. Like, I'm and it's, this is bad, but I'm mildly terrified we're going to get like a super go lucky happy
yeah,
ending.
I agree. No, that's the.
So, I don't want any weddings at the end of this. I don't want any smiles.
I mean,
I want sadness everywhere.
To me, the super interesting thing going into the series finale is just how they end this thing. Like, I don't really care what happens to Kuvira at all, but I am invested in Korra's, if they do the Korra's mental state arc. Like, that I'm super invested in. But just what tone are they going to end this on? How are they going to end it? Like, that is, to me, the most uncertain and interesting thing.
Are we all going to be sobbing, or is it going to be like...
I mean, we'll be sobbing either way.
I mean, that was my biggest issue with the end of Avatar is that there were no stakes. Like, literally everyone got it with... Even Ozai got out of it perfectly fine. I mean, yeah, okay, Sokka broke his leg.
That worked perfectly well.
Zuko got a little bit dinged in the chest. but it didn't have a huge emotional impact on me until like we got to the Katang scene, because nobody was got hurt and I didn't feel like anyone was in danger. Even when Toph was hanging off that airship, like I didn't feel like I was in danger. Like I want to, and that's the thing is like I want to see consequences. I want to feel like they're in danger. And that's what this show has shown, you know, so far, because they've had two on-screen deaths. You know, they've shown that there are consequences that you lose things. Granted, those on-screen deaths were for people we didn't really care about / antagonists, but that's why I'd like to see coming out of this not unscathed.
The book three of Avatar to me is one of the biggest. I mean, that's not the biggest problem, but there's just no ramifications. It didn't feel as epic as it could have because nothing super bad happened. And it's also my big problem with the Harry Potter finale. No one really important had any consequences. Yeah. Like, I was not necessarily the biggest fan just because, I mean, it was super tropey, and also just the fact that it was like,
she was killing off a lot of other characters to make up for the fact that she didn't.
It's like Ron should have died. Like, this is what should have happened, but
Ron almost died.
He should have.
She almost killed him in books.
It's not because, it's just, I don't know. I don't know if this is a flaw in how we think, or if this is like something in storytelling.
Well,
I feel like
a lot of it, like, for me, how I feel about it is I'm so used to happy endings that I don't want happy endings.
Yeah, so it's like on a psychological level.
It's I don't necessarily think it's like an issue, we're so used to happy endings, and, like, it's just a thing that people, like, it's just like, I want something different.
It's like, it's so clear to me.
I'm trained not to care about happy endings.
It's so clear to me that I need stakes in the finale to take it seriously. Like, I wonder why that is. You know?
Especially as a series finale.
Yeah.
I think it's fair, because the fact that it is
a series. I think it's a fair point, yeah. Just a deeper level, I'm not sure. Mel, what chances would you give to Korra dying, percentage-wise?
Probably below 50%.
Yeah, I gave it a 30. Do you think that's about right?
Yeah, I was putting it around a 40 in my head. So. Yeah.
Even 30. I just don't think they're going to do it.
I don't think she's going to die, which is like I. Which
and
is
that's
bad,
why I
that's
said when
like
we were talking about this earlier this week, I said she won't. But
yeah.
I think it's a real
possibility, though, because, you know, it's literally
the end. It's more of a possibility than people think, I think.
And, you know, that's really saying something for the show and its quality, because you really have to earn your endings, and you really have to earn an ending where you kill off your main character, and to be at a point where a lot of people would like to see the main character die because of just the poeticness it would bring to it is really saying something.
I think you can make an argument that there's been no better earned main character death or otherwise, like serious thing, than Korra dying, than maybe in any other TV show out there. Like, she's, I mean, like, no, but it's like Korra, Walter White, like John Hamm, like, no, seriously, these are the big ones, right? So Korra's on that level. Like, I think they've done so well with this arc.
I mean, obviously I agree, because I named that episode last season as the greatest thing I'd ever seen on television.
Yeah, it's just so good. And I think it would even be more satisfying than a Don Draper death, which we'll see next year. Like, I don't think Don Draper's going to die, but, you know, like, it's so...
Yeah, no, it's, and, you know, there are certain characters who just really earn a death, and it's very, very profound. And that's why... You know, when I brought back my Matrix thing, it was like, it didn't really make sense. It didn't really matter. Frodo was a huge thing, and though he didn't actually die, it was the equivalent of it. Like, that was a really earned, very emotional moment. And not to give away spoilers, but you all should know by now, in the end of Breaking Bad, like, that was a hugely earned death of that character for vastly different reasons, but...
Ambiguous,
however, I
probably,
don't want
but...
an Allegiant ending.
Well, no spoilers on that. Because
everyone knows Dylan.
I don't know.
Because Dylan hasn't read the book.
I know one of the two. I don't know which one, though. Okay, so I think the important thing is that just emotions behind and the caring and emotions behind, right, that in Korra dying would be definitely there. That's kind of what we're getting at. Other things that could happen in the finale. We talked about I think I'm going to point to this podcast in this part in the description, so maybe some people didn't hear the previous part. In order, ships most likely to have a canonical pairing up together. Varric and Julie 1, Kai and Jinora 2, Bolan and Opal 3, even though that already happens. And then there's really not much else. I think Mako might be dead, so we don't know about any sort of Mako and Korra closure.
Asami might be dead.
Asami might be dead, so any Korra
that's
and Asami
how they
closure.
Resolve, that's,
how you know.
They
that's how they resolve. Everyone's dead.
By the way, if anyone's curious, Allie's asleep.
Yeah, I assume she was asleep.
I figured.
Yeah. She fell asleep on podcast. That's new. That is a new one. Okay. She's fell asleep on call before.
Congrats, Ellie.
Other than that, what else? What else should we talk about?
She's shuffling.
What about the epilogue? Yes or no on an epilogue?
I hate epilogues. I hate epilogues just as much as I hate prologues. And this is, yes. We talked about this in my intermediate fiction class. You know, this kid was talking about the beginning of his story and everyone's like, cut it. He's like, no, I really need the intro. And my teacher just went, the fact that you called it an intro is the exact reason why you need to cut it. Mm-hmm. Epilogues and prologues, not part of the story.
What about the Avatar ending? Do you consider that an epilogue?
No, that's not an epilogue. That's still, well.
See, it's in the middle, right?
Yeah, it's weird middle ground because it relates, but it only relates on one point. Even that, though, I was kind of, I have bigger issues with.
I do like how they related it, and it's also not too far in the future. That's the thing.
Yeah, I would say is in a weird middle ground, but I don't want any 19 years later.
See, I think that's what's going to happen for Korra. Like, I think it's going to be like a few weeks later, Wu is democratically elected. That's the tie-in, and then we see.
You have a prologue or an epilogue in any of your stories, you've automatically docked it 10 points down
on Mel's grading
in the realm
scale,
of how
good
it can be.
Well, so I think.
So, like the Mockingjay Part 2, the epilogue there.
Yeah.
No, that's not.
I really can say that I've ever really liked.
That is my favorite part of like the entire series. I think that's so good. Like, I don't think it's an epilogue.
For me, Harry Potter is like it, but you know, epilogues, like, no, we don't
even
need
Harry Potter's epilogue. Get rid of it.
Harry Potter's epilogue is just, it's like a fan fiction at the end. It's
literally, that's the point of epilogues, is to tie up your nice fan fiction-y loose ends. Get rid of it.
Yeah, I think Hunger Games' epilogue is the most crucial thing I've ever seen to the ending of a story. Yeah,
Hunger Games does make a very good point in its epilogue. I would like it to be a little more connected to the rest to make.
I think it was pretty connected. I can't wait for. Actually, I'm really looking forward to part two now. Like the end, the entire end.
Because you just remembered how it ends.
The entire end of Mockingjay is so perfect. I love it so much.
Yeah, no,
everything from someone dying into the end. I just think that's so good.
Yes.
About that, I don't know how to feel.
No, it's like I just love it so much. I don't know.
I love it too. Like it was the best.
I like how it ends in terms of Katniss and what's going on with Katniss.
That's the only thing that matters,
though.
The completion
of her arc and then how it took her, you know, a bunch of times. We're completely out of tangent, guys.
From a character dying to the end, it's fine. From a character dying back, it's not great.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, basically. So I think the most
if
likely...
If Korra could have that, where it, like, completed her in some way. Like, it was just, like, it wasn't, like, an epilogue, but it was Mockingjay-type epilogue, where you saw the rest... And it was sort of the end, and you felt final, like you take the deep breath out, and then
the problem here is I don't think Korra's earned an epilogue.
No.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
So here's, in order of, we already had a three-year time jump.
No.
In order of likelihood, I think we are most likely to get the Avatar-type epilogue, which is only a little bit in the future.
Which is fine.
I would say that's over 50%. I think the least likely thing to happen is 20 years in the future. I think they won't do that.
I think it's very unlikely.
And the moderately likely is no epilogue.
A lot of
people
think it's going to be a huge time jump in the future, though.
I don't.
If they did,
just because people want to
invade Japan. Well, no, it comes from a shipping standpoint.
Yeah,
it's just a shipping standpoint.
I would be very surprised to see like 20 years in the future. That'd be so surprising.
That'd be so dumb.
I'd be so mad. So thoroughly.
Epilogue is the best way to ruin what.
Yes.
Everything your show was. Like, this is one of the best shows on television ever. Epilogue will immediately ruin that.
I think it's very. And as we. I personally would love to see 20 years epilogue because, as like, just as so invested in the characters, but.
Just because you want to see Jenora.
Just because, okay.
That's what fan fiction is for, and keep it there.
We must see adult Jenora. That is the only...
I just don't want an epilogue in Korra. Like, I completely agree that Korra has not earned an epilogue. I don't want an epilogue. No.
I mean, I don't know of earning an epilogue, whatever. Like, I think Korra...
Well, I say that in terms of the Katniss epilogue. Like, there was something to be done there, and there was a point to that epilogue being talked about.
Yeah, so
either
what
Korra
if...
Korra doesn't have that.
What if Korra dies? Could that potentially bring about a scenario that would require... some sort of closure on it, like for the other characters where they'd have to meet up later, you know?
It could, but again, that's in, depending on how later you are, you're in gray area for what is an epilogue and what isn't.
Yeah, I agree. It's like if they're at her funeral 2 weeks later, that's totally fine, you know?
And that's, I'd rather that than see them 10 years from now visiting her grave.
Yeah, I agree. So in terms of other things we haven't discussed, we discussed this earlier, who's dead, but one Batar Jr., two Mako, and then other people. Do you think it's over? And I think it's over 50% that Batar is dead right now. Do you think it's over 50% that Mako's dead?
I don't think he has anything left to serve.
What do you think about Mako, though?
I don't think he's dead.
Mako dying would be ballsy.
I think it'd be very ballsy. I think it's the ballsy thing they need.
Also, killing him before the finale, right? That's so interesting.
That'd be great.
I think I don't know if I think it's like I don't know. I assume it's under 50% likely, because that just seems like this would be the most surprising thing they've done in the entire show.
I would be very happy, but not just for like.
It would be really interesting. I would say probably it's not what's happening, right?
I think it's interesting though that Sue pointed out shortly before this happened, she literally asked Batar how many people have to lose their life.
Yeah.
She's satisfied, and I think that's a great omen or set up to the possibility of all this happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think, I don't know, is Mako at 40% to be dead right now? That's so high. I don't know if it's that high.
I think he only for me, is like, circumstantially. I mean, because he, you know, everyone pointed out he was closest to the window, all this other stuff, yada yada.
He's like very clearly closest to the window.
I mean, if they kill anyone else, it wouldn't make any sense if Mako didn't also.
Like, if they, it, like, if... Like,
he's in the right, like, he is vaporized.
If Mako was, they were going to write They were going to storyboard this ending scene from a perspective where Mako dies. This is how they would have done it. Made him clearly closer to the beam than anyone else, right? Like, so you can see it on that level.
Yeah, he's in the back of that.
He's, like, very clearly in the back.
I mean, he's several steps away from everyone else.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's less likely than likely, but it's more likely than I would have ever thought going into the finale.
Well, thing is, like, and I mean, I really don't think, like, to me, Batar dying doesn't make much sense. Given the idea of forgiveness and the idea of
that's true,
like,
we have to
Batar
we should,
dying
yeah.
like if Batar dies like it, yeah it would make it's great for Kuvira's character and like her characterization, but then it means nothing for the whole for Batar and his family.
Yeah,
I think like, that's great though. I think cutting off potential is great, and I think that's like, super duper like
it's not,
painful
it's not that
and super
this.
Duper shocking as a reader.
I think from a perspective of like
I just don't think they did that. I don't think he's dead.
Well, yeah,
not to mention it would put Sue in a great position to just have all these emotions because it's super angry, super sad, and mad at herself, guilty, mad at Batar, mad at Kuvira. Like it would set up some great stuff for Sue.
Yeah, well, we should consider
and, like,
it from the person.
Like the whole Beifong family would be just in. Pieces
and then
up.
he doesn't get his redemption, he doesn't get his forgiveness, like that's very poetic.
I mean, I think it's more likely that Batar is alive and that Sue is dead right now.
I don't think
Sue's dead.
So it's on a narrative level, outside of considering what's likely to happen, I think that it's more satisfying that he's dead. But we should consider that Mike and Brian in one interview were like, oh, forgiveness is a big theme this season.
Yeah, that's my
thing. So,
like, that's why I don't think...
That is something to factor in.
Because he is the poster child for
you
forgiveness.
You could forgive him while he's dying.
Yeah.
He's dying. Maybe he just
could
gets
have
injured.
One of those scenes.
This is... No, this injured. Is... The way they set that up is one of the things where you'll find the carnage after it happens, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to see any during... Beam shots. We got all
Lynn,
that.
Lynn is looking for survivors.
Yeah, that's
and
the thing.
And I really hope that we don't see it.
Oh man,
time.
Like
I really
if we get this
it.
Clip. If the clip is Lynn finding out someone's dead. Oh my goodness.
But they won't say who. They like retract.
It's like her face. No, the clip's
like,
gonna be right coding.
They blurt out like they beep out the name. I can't believe Brr is dead. the other interesting thing too is the way Lynn was like, "I'll look for survivors." Like.
Yeah.
That's a very dark.
Like obviously somebody's gone
to say that because obviously someone's got to be dead.
And I just can't believe that like she doesn't know her entire family. Oh.
Here's an update from Nickelodeon on Twitter. They say the finale still has to be ingested into our digital system. So
ingested.
So that would
has to be consumed.
That would indicate no clip tonight.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
And any clip we would have gotten would have been something stupid.
Okay, I don't want a clip if... yes, we're almost done. I don't want a clip if it's going to be
it's
revealing
gonna be
Riker, who dies,
like,
you know? Okay. I think we've basically covered all the finale prediction stuff. So, my biggest call is...
I still think Lynn's going to die.
So why would... Anyone could... I don't think Lynn's going to die. I think that would have happened already.
I don't know.
I think that's the thing with Bolin, too.
It wouldn't serve any purpose to the plot.
I think
like,
Bolin
would
have died already, too.
Well, I mean, it would serve purpose to her character.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, there's a bunch of other stuff
I've
could.
I've written an essay on this.
Okay, any other specific quick predictions for the finale?
Everybody's gonna die. Everyone dead.
Everyone's dead. Okay, good Everyone. One. Cool.
Zaheer's gonna take out Kuvira.
Yes, Zaheer.
I am.
They bust Zaheer out. Plot
twist. Ooh, so it's an interesting thing to think about. If they evacuated Republic City, where did they evacuate Zaheer? You know, like what's going on?
What if she hits the mouth and he like blasts out and is like?
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Goodbye.
That would be
goodbye,
best.
Mel. Goodbye. Okay. So yeah, no, if Zaheer's guards are evacuated or something. But he, so that like, give, which enables him to get out, you know, something like that. I don't think I would say I would be very surprised if we saw Zaheer or heard Zaheer's name in the finale. I'd be surprised. I think his bringing him back was great for what it was, and it was closure on its own, you know, for Zaheer. Okay. I think that about wraps it up. I don't know. It's gonna be very exciting next week.
Yep, very exciting. We're all gonna die, regardless of who dies on the show. We're all going to die. Because this finale is going to kill us.
Obviously, yeah. Okay, so again, yeah, so...
We're going to have a new, like, time measurement scheme before Korra, after Korra.
Yes.
Korra is Jesus.
Like, what was my life before Korra? After.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's the new thing. Okay, thanks. Yes. Okay, let's begin to end. I've been your main host, Dylan, co-host. I've been Mel, Delaney, Britt, Jeff, Allie. Is that five? Probably. Tech directors, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Musical credits, the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Triff. Logo banner by Kevin. Dumb things on by Jay. Special contributor, Gareth. Contributors, Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi. Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan,
name. That's
Jamie,
great.
Yeah.
We're meant to be earning it.
Gretchen left us a review on iTunes. She's great, yeah. Yep, G Millionaire, sure. Sierra Miss, Nick and Knight, Rudy and Spooty, Coin, Fetchin, Opal, Iroh, Jay, Nora. So, for our coverage next week, subscribe to our YouTube channel, FTSW Podcast, one word. I assume it will give you a notification if we set when we set up a live video podcast. The plan, if Nick does not put it up at midnight, will be a live video podcast, I think around 1 p.m. Eastern, and then a recorded audio podcast, which we would record at 7, and which would go up around midnight. If they do put it up at midnight, we might have to do the 1 a.m. live video podcast. We'll see if that's viable. I don't know. Yes. So just look out for that at Dongbufeng, one word, Dongbufeng, Tumblr and Twitter. And you can find me and ask me any clarification questions on Tumblr at DylanFTSW. If you had feedback for this podcast, you can post on the forums at dongbufeng.net/forums. And you can give us some iTunes reviews. Those are great. You guys have been giving a lot of those. Shout out to some people, if I can load this up quickly enough. And, yeah, bug Nick on Twitter to put it up at midnight. I don't know if that'll matter, but I think...
Yes, spam them. Smiley faces.
They know. Here's the thing. The Nick Twitter person knows at this point it's all about asking higher-ups, right? The higher-ups aren't checking their Twitter, so she or he is there. It's like emailing the person, and it's like, could we do this? And they'll reply back, and we'll see.
The reason
I think this request is very reasonable is because Nick already does this. The website team already automates clips to go up at midnight, so they could very easily automate the episode to go up at midnight. We'll see what they say, though. Shout-outs to Chippy, LOKFan2, whose title of their review was hashtag begin dismantling the dome of my heart, which is great.
That's perfect.
And Bebreezy... Sweet Nessa Rose, which is Gretchen, I think, and H.Noel, all these people have, you know, Telekinesis Man. We've gotten a lot of positive reviews in a row. Thank you very much, guys. And
you guys rock that.
Thank you.
Anyway,
that didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't.
If you're wondering about the future of this specific podcast from a spirit world, we'll be continuing at least a month after the finale, so... We'll be doing so. We have to rank the Korra episodes. I don't care what else we do. Me and Mel will debate the Korra ranked episodes.
Brian's going to be on that podcast. I watched all of Avatar for your little butt.
You did do that. Yeah, you've been on. Yeah, yes, do
yeah.
it, Brett.
Hello. Yeah.
You too. Yeah. Okay. So that's
remember
it.
We did that. It was a week.
It was a week. It was a long time. Yeah. I would love to rank.
Actually, I never finished book three, but I'll finish.
I would love to rank the Avatar episodes again, but.
I hate ranking, and I did it for you. Jerk.
I don't know. Some of those were just like, I'll put this in this tier because reasons.
Yeah,
I made them up.
I hope that, I mean, right now the top five Korra episodes are pretty clear. Or
Yes.
Wait, are they? I don't know. At least
I think they are.
Wait, let me look at my rankings.
Doesn't mean I have the same top five as you.
The top four right now. The top four episodes I think are pretty clear. I would love for the fifth to be the last episode and join the
please.
Join Cora Alone, the Stakeout, the Metal Clan, and Venom of the Red Lotus, which are to me clearly the four best episodes. And there's some others you could argue up there, but I don't know. I think those are the clear four. Okay. Any last thoughts before we send it off next week to the great unknown?
We need.
Allie is asleep. Mel is gone. It is just us three. Or
yes. Because four. Allie's asleep.
Missal me forever. There you go. That was my thoughts.
We should end on Allie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See if that wakes her up.
Exactly.
No, I think it should be something finale related. We can do Allie after
25
it.
Stories of
25 terrible. Stories. That'd be a good one.
I still can't 25 stories. I can't
dismantle the domes.
No,
right.
Yeah, but there's no domes. There's no domes.
No. The domes have been dismantled.
Yeah.
I still like.
We can say it really menacingly. You can use your dark avatar voice.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's
so I will never be over 25 stories. That
we love you, Batar.
That's worse than the Tenzin line. We love you, Batar.
Colin Heck, did he direct this episode? Let me look on my outline. Because, you know, theoretically, that is where this information should be. Colin directed this episode. He reblogged a what the bleep break in GIF set and said, this made me laugh. So thank you, Colin, for that. Good job. Actually, though, this is an incredibly directed episode. Just the class is so well handled. Okay. We're going to end on 25 stories and then Allie to see if she wakes up. Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week in multiple podcasts. 1, 2, 3, 25 stories.
25 stories.
25 stories.